again, friends. And you are my friends. And welcome to another edition of 605 Super Podcast Holiday Special Snow Day Star Wars. Originally, this was going to be St. Patrick's Day Star Wars, but I threw out my back, and I'm not the only one, shoveling snow the last couple days in this blizzard we got up here, and I decided to make it Snow Day Star Wars. The kids are home from school the last couple days, probably a delayed opening tomorrow. Snow Day Star Wars it is, and just like the previous episodes of Star Wars, the holiday special of the Super Podcast, we have many special guests scheduled for today's show, frequent co-hosts and guests that you'll finally get to hear talk to each other, and of course, I'm joined by one of the most popular people on our show, the ever-talented, my good friend, Tom Robbins. The other thing is we're trying not to edit this show, and it's already becoming a disaster. My good friend, Tom Robinson. Tom, how are you today?
TGBL. What's happening? The reason you can't speak is because you're lying when you said good friend.
Yeah, you're a motherfucker.
You can't speak. And ultra talented or ultra controversial. I guess I'll bring that up later. I don't know if it's me. I'll just sit on the thought for now. And
what are you saying? Where are you going with that?
Well, I wanted to wait just in case Mr. Baldwin comes on at some point in this shindig. But I saw a copy of a tweet that he wrote to Missy Hyatt, who said that listening to the 605 would be, I got to paraphrase, I can't remember verbatim, an issue of integrity and a conflict of interest, which...
That wasn't about you. I thought it was about me. Was it about you?
I don't know. I just thought maybe she didn't like, well, not me, of course. Some characters may have lampooned some people she knew once in a while, or maybe Mr. Cornish or something. Maybe a lot of people get uptight and don't understand satire and humor. And
I don't know. All I know is this, and if Jeff is on the show, we'll talk to him a little bit about it. Missy Hyatt was one of those people I've always thought would be a great guest on the show, because whenever I've heard her in the setting of talking about classic wrestling, she is really, really good. She's really, really good. When you get away from like the whole scandalous Missy Hyatt thing, she's fantastic talking wrestling. And, she was around a lot of cool stuff. She was Eddie Gilbert's wife when he was on the booking committee. She was around a lot of neat stuff. And I always thought she'd be a good guest. And, several people in the past have said to me, oh, you got to get Missy Hyatt. You got to get Missy Hyatt. I was like, yeah, I'd love to have her. And whenever they would, tweet her and stuff, I never did. But whenever they would, she would, just not respond or blow it off. And then Baldwin, who she knows. I mean, Jeff Baldwin, he's Baldwin the Booker. He has a hell of a reputation. He tweeted her and she said that, and then several people saw it and messaged me, and there are lots of theories. One is, apparently she's buddies with Lance Storm.
Okay.
Some people think it may be because, I let Lance Storm have it after he decided to attack me on Twitter, but I stand by everything I said about him, and I still say that you should fight back if someone takes shots at you, and I wasn't even going to. Cornette asked me to. He said, we have to comment about it on the air. I said, oh, no problem. I'll take care of that in 2 seconds. Or it could have been about impressionist Jim Ross, or it could just be she doesn't like me, or she doesn't like you, or Scott, or someone on the show. I don't know, but all I know is the next day, someone's like, or maybe it was even the same day, someone said, hey, did you see what Missy Hyatt just tweeted out? I was like, no, what did she tweet out? She tweeted out the link to that episode to Georgia Championship Wrestling Superstars that you put up, and she's like live, doing commentary live on Twitter while she watches it. I'm like, oh, well, that's fine. My show logo is on there. It takes everyone to the Arcadian Vanguard video page. Cool. One of the videos on the page is me calling Lance Storm cunty Lance Storm. So perfect. It all works out in the end. But So who knows?
I actually remember one episode fairly recently where you were talking about her as a talent, which is actually not what most people speak of when they speak of her. And you were bringing up the fact that she was very good in her role and things of that nature.
We put her over several times recently as a talent. And the truth is, I think Missy Hyatt is like one of the missed opportunities, right? We're one of the most under-pushed people who could have been pushed in the history of wrestling in the modern era, just because she was so good and she got over so fast in the UWF, in World Class. She was perfect in her role. I mean, she was a wrestling fan. She wanted to be in the wrestling business. She got in the business and she hit a home run with the Missy Hyatt character. And then once she went to the WWF in early 87, and that did not work. I mean, by her own admission, I think That was a bomb. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like no one knew what to do with her ever again. She was okay with Eddie in Memphis in 88, but they didn't really do anything with her worthwhile in Continental. In NWA in 89, she was just kind of like the Steiner's side piece. No, I shouldn't say side piece, but like she was like the one holding the dog while they wrestled. You know, like she did nothing as a baby face. And then she became a commentator. I mean, she arm wrestled Paul Lee. I guess that's maybe the highlight of her run in WCW, and had the bikini contest with Medusa at Beach Blast 92. That may actually be the highlight now that I think about it. And
yeah, it worked for me. Yeah. Speaking of Blast. But anyway.
My friend had his bar mitzvah that day, the day of Beach Blast 92, and his father got somewhat intoxicated and really, really mad at me because I wouldn't stay for the after party because I had to go home and watch Beach Blast. Because I wanted to see the bikini contest with Medusa and Miss Hyatt. 30-minute Iron Man match, Rick Rude and Ricky Steamboat. That's what I needed to see.
Of course.
He didn't want to hear it, though, and he got very – I had to walk home. he wouldn't give me a ride home. He was driving all the kids around in his, like, whatever he had, like a Porsche or something, as fast as he could in the parking lot, you know, while having a few drinks. But when it was time for me to go home, he was like, no, you got to stay for the after party. I'm like, I'm not. I want to go
Fuck
see –
Fuck that. Beach Blast, bro.
Yeah, I want to see – and that was it. I went to see Missy and Medusa in their bikinis on the runway.
Yeah.
With Johnny B. Badd as the MC. What a decision that was. But, yeah. But yeah, I mean,
well, good then. I'm glad you get some heat once in a while.
I don't give a shit. That's the other problem, though. I think it matters to people when, you know, they care too much about what other people think. I don't give a fuck. You know what? What heat do I have?
Yeah. I'm the same way. That's, I mean, it's not like, kind of like, art imitating life when contemporary wrestling, as we like to say. One line from Mick Foley last week was like, I don't need to work here, when they had a little sparring match between he and Stephanie McMahon. It's like, you're doing your own thing. I'm glad to be part of it. And I'm just telling some things and making some jokes about something I've loved forever. You know what I mean? So
yeah, so it doesn't matter. But hey, I'll tell you what. The way Holiday Star Wars works is we get different guests, different people from the Super Podcast on the line together, and we see what happens. So I'm going to add someone right now. Let's see what happens. I'm clicking this person. I'm clicking add. All right, let's see what happens here.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by what happens here? What do you mean? What? Witnesses here? What's going on here? What is this, a district attorney?
Well, we can try to connect a couple of people.
What's going on here? Let's see what happens here. We got, what are we, fingerprints, thumbprints? What's going on? Mugshots?
For those of you who are unaware, and I don't know how you could be, it's the Universal Heartthrob, Austin Idol, here on
Oh,
this.
baby. When you want to kill a cockroach, you use a pesticidal. When you want to crash a podcast, you use Austin Idol. So thrilled to be here. We got the podcast lion, the great Brian. We got we got Tom the Bomb Robinson. Who knows what's going to go on with him? Thanks, guys, for having me. Send me the money overnight, please.
Now I know it really is Austin Idol on the phone.
Yes, overnight, please. Please,
this
overnight.
This is the last taping.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm no showing if I don't get the money.
Have you, Tom, have you ever met Austin Idol?
To the best of my knowledge, no. And I probably would remember because I was a big Austin Idol mark. Mr. Idol, it's nice to meet you if I haven't crossed paths in the past. And, you know, I will have a genuine moment before we mess around here and just say that your thing with Jerry Lawler, your epic hair match conclusion, was the probably highlight of my wrestling fandom as a youngster. And no, thank you for your work. It was pretty cool, and I'm glad to have you as part of this 605 maniacal family.
Maniacal, I love that. Maniacal. Does that mean like crazy and insane and
crazy, insane, unpredictable, things of that nature?
Oh, so the Edgar Allan Poe show.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm all up in that, baby. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that thing. He OD'd on Belladonna, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think so.
Yeah, Once Upon a Midnight Dreary, When All I Pondered Weak and Weary, something like that.
Tom once overdosed on Belladonna, too. He had all of her videos, the famous porn star, Belladonna.
Yo, hey. Baby. Yeah, I saw a couple of those. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Well, I saw about 3 minutes of seven of them.
Let me see, 3 times 7, 21. Yeah, okay, I got it. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for having me, Tom, and saying those nice things, you know, whether you met him or not. I do appreciate it, okay?
Definitely did. I want to get to a question of sorts, because yeah. I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to talk to you like this. I was looking at that and that. I was looking at that that anthology type deal or whatever it is on YouTube, trying to find an interview that I had on one of my Mempho tapes that you did. I don't know if you'll remember the interview, but Heyman actually did a homage or maybe just a ripoff of it on a fairly recent, about a year ago. Okay. You talked about being similar to a volcano and that lava law, or you're red hot. Do you remember that interview?
Red hot. Gosh.
You said, I'm like the lava that comes down the volcano. I'm red hot, Jerry Lawler. And wow. I like it. It was like the best one of that whole series, but in that YouTube package of the whole thing, they would cut to some interviews from like Evansville where you were doing different interviews for the different TV.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for the different TV. It was all for Memphis TV, but it was geared toward that audience. So I think somehow that got skipped.
Okay.
But, it was classic, and it was one that's on one of these tapes that's collecting dust around my house from the '80s. But, then damn if I don't see Paul representing Brock Lesnar say, Brock is like the lava on the mountain, and it's red hot. And I said, holy shit, he's doing Idol on Raw.
We're always, you know, we're copying, we're stealing from somebody, you know. So, man, and I've spoken, Brian and I've kind of touched on this a little bit, you know. I mean, I gave him his first break, Tom, in Memphis. I really believe I did, because he was just there, you know, kind of a young, brash kid. He's from New York, and we hit it off, and he befriended me, and I liked him, you know, and I could tell he was aggressive, and he wanted to do something, and he wanted to make something of himself. So I'm the one who went, I mean, I went to Lawler and said, hey, I like this kid. Let's put him with me. Let him be my manager, because I'd never had one before. And it would be different for me. I mean, a totally different look, deal. And so, you know, put him with me. And I think it might be cool. So, yeah, I mean, he went from managing me and then, you know, the hair match and everything else that transpired. And now look where he is. Do you think I ever got a phone call from him? No. Who cares?
Yeah, you see the same people on the way up as you do on the way down, as the late Dennis Carluzzo used to say. But he's doing okay for himself, that's for sure.
Yeah, he is. He's done great for himself. So good for him, and good for anybody who is successful. I mean, I'm a big cheerleader of capitalism. And listen, anybody that does well, good for them. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Tom, didn't you recently listen to Austin Idol Live and hear something that he said and take it to heart and make a decision for your life based on the advice?
Yeah, I took some, I'm 47 years old, which tells you how well I have my shit together. I'm listening to Austin Idol Live for life advice, and no disrespect. I do value your opinion from what I've heard from, you know, everything from the book you put out and all that other good stuff. But, you talked about many places, which people had different opinions of at the time when you left territories and so forth. But now I kind of understand you were looking out for, as you said more than once, part-time gig. What's better? And I'm overqualified for this job I'm doing, and not with Brian. Brian and I, Brian lets me tag along to Super 605 Super Podcast sometime. That's not what I'm referring to, this quote-unquote shoot job, as they say. Yeah. And I just took a lot of shit, and I said, I kind of cut a promo and said, you know, but it was heartfelt. It was genuine. I said, you know, it's beneath me for what you're asking. And, thanks for everything. Literally, I had one of your shows in mind when I threw that in. It was kind of a bluff, but it might not end up a bluff, because they were like, hey, you're one of my best, but you know, good luck in the future. And I didn't have a plan B. So I'm lucky I got a couple dollars, or I'd be cold right now in the snow. But I may or may not thank you for that advice in a couple months.
You're going to see the unemployment rate rise as Austin Idol Live gets more and more popular.
but you know, I tell you, Tom, but you know, I tell you what I love about what you just said is that, you know, when you have that plan B, and I know that's most people are going to feel comfortable with say, well, hey, listen, I've got a safety net here. I know I can go over here and do, I've got a gig, whatever. That it takes the risk out of the whole equation. And when you don't have the plan B, that for me, that's what I love because, hey, all right, I don't have that plan B. I just walked away from whatever, doing whatever for, because I wasn't happy. You know, I didn't, you know, maybe I was getting the shaft or the conditions, whatever the case may be. I didn't like what I was doing. So now I don't have a plan B. So I've backed myself into a corner and you know, maybe it's just weird. Maybe it's me being weird. I like being backed into a corner. I really do because it's like a Rocky movie. You're being hammered. You know, you got your fists up. You know, and you're trying to block those punches, and you just want to come out, bang, and land one. Boom, and someone takes a step back, and bang, you nail them again. And I like that challenge. I mean, I just love a challenge. And I don't think there's anything that we can't achieve if we put our minds to it. I mean, I just don't believe it. I mean, we don't have to be Einsteins and, you know, and geniuses. We just don't. I mean, I think it's just having your radar up, your eyes open, your ears open, looking, pounding, knocking, the networking, you know, something for me, it's always turned out okay. I mean, it really has. And man, I've walked away from so many gigs, turned down quite a few. And I just said, hey, I'm going to do my own thing because I just want to be happy. You know, I mean, that's me. I mean, that's idle. I mean, truly, I just want to be happy. Yeah, I would rather be happy making less than being miserable making more. I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Can't argue.
Yeah, you can. That. Sure, you can. Brian will argue all day long.
Well, Brian, he's sitting on a pile of money up there somewhere. He won't even tell me where he lives. I got to send things to Morristown, New Jersey. So,
yeah. Exactly.
He's not leaving anywhere.
He's washing money is what he's doing. You know, offshore. He's got an offshore thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
To change the topic off this, accusation rather quickly. you know, this is Snow Day Star Wars. That's the name of this episode. And I have thrown out my back shoveling snow the last couple of days. And 2 days, the kids have been off from school, delayed openings. It's crazy up here. Austin Idol, when's the last time you were in snow?
Not long ago. Because really? I'm in the foothills of the Appalachians. I'm like 50 miles south of Asheville, North Carolina. A couple of weeks ago, we had, I think, an inch or so of snow. Yeah.
Because, you know, there is that misconception about you that when you were working for the WWWF, you were so just turned off by the idea of snow being from Tampa, being from the south, that you just said, never again. I will never be around snow ever again. But that's not true.
No, not really. I was tired anyway. I was just physically tired. I mean, I really was. And, you know, you're young and you think that, hey, well, I can come back and do this, whatever. It's just a phase. There's another stage of life. I'll come back. But we got hit with a big ice storm. I mean, ice was, you're familiar with them. Ice was crystal. Everything was crystal. And I thought, man, I don't need to be riding around, driving around this kind of stuff. I'm going to go back to Florida. I gave Vince Sr. my notice. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible conditions up here in Philly. I'm in Philly. And, it reminded me of that old Jack Briscoe story, what you were just saying, Brian, you probably remember it, verbatim exactly what happened, but Briscoe was working for Vince and he just got on a plane and went home and he was like, I'm tired of this shit. It was like a snowstorm in Syracuse or something. Yeah. Brian, are you familiar with that story?
Yeah, they were about to get the tag titles, I believe, the Briscoes. They were feuding with Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch right as the expansion was really heating up, the end of 84. And, you know, they made that deal. It was the Briscoe brothers who made the deal to sell the Georgia stock to Vince that really turned the tide against Ole Anderson. And got Vince the TBS time spot, got him Georgia Championship Wrestling because he had controlling interest in the company. And they were set. I mean, he was going to take care of the Briscoes. He took care of Jerry Briscoe. He had a job there. He still has a job there, I believe.
Right.
For the rest of his life. Jack just one day decided he was in the snow. He just said, I don't want to be here. And he just jumped on an airplane and left. And
I'm happy.
You know, it's a certain trait that guys from that era had, because Terry Funk, too. Apparently, Terry Funk, just one day he was there. And the next day he sent Vince a note that it said something along the lines of, I have to go. My horse is sick. And then he
Well, there you go, though. I mean, you know, you just say, if you're not happy, change, you know, make a change, do something about it. If you're not, it's better to do something about it, I think, than to stay where you are and be miserable and get into that downer complaining mode, you know. Just go. I mean, I would tell anybody that. Just go find something else to do. You'll find it. It's out there. Yeah.
I know it's coming, but just in case, is there any opening at the pizza shop?
Yeah, we'll fit you in. Absolutely, Tom. Sure, we will. Yeah, and we're going to waive the background check on you, okay?
Cool.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That works for me.
On the topic of risks,
yeah,
you know, you made a lot of risks in your personal life, and you've been very successful, but in the world of professional wrestling, in that area of your professional life, what would you say was the biggest risk you ever took?
Oh, the biggest risk probably was getting back into the business as a different person, from Iron Mike McCord to Austin Idol. You know, I think that was that was probably my biggest risk, really, because I didn't know how it would work out. It was just a big risk. I said, well, yeah, I'm going to take a shot, man. I'm doing my hair. I've lost all that weight and kind of figured myself out and got booked in Dallas. You know that story about going to Dallas, and they gave me the wrong name, Austin Idol, which was, God, I mean, come on, please. I don't know.
Now that gimmick I could use.
Yeah, but I don't know what Gary was on when he came. Please. But regardless, I mean, that was a big risk. But it worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly did.
Uh-huh.
That could be kind of like if you ever went back into the business, you could have your little like sidekick, Austin Idol, and it could be Tom, and he could just, you know, sometimes
just sit in the corner.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, absolutely, Tom.
And it'll be like, can you distract the referee? Well, I'm kind of idle right now.
Oh, that's funny stuff, guys.
Tom, you love the hair versus hair match. You love that entire feud with Lawler. And I got to say, one of the revelations to me getting to know Austin Idol was how big of a Yankee fan he really is. Because I remember that promo where it's him and Tommy Rich, and Idol's wearing the Yankee hat, the Yankee jersey, the Yankee coat. And it's like, wow, he's trying to play up the New York thing to get heat, not realizing he's originally from New York and he really is a Yankee fan.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that interview as well. Was that the same one where Tommy turned around and punched Randy Hales, or was that a different one?
Yeah.
Yeah. That made me laugh when you gave Tommy the order to knock Randy Hales out of the interview.
Oh, man, he was scared to death, you know, and that was Jerry Jarrett's deal. He should just turn around and pop him, hit him, you know. Boy, Randy Hales, he looked like Abe Lincoln. I mean, he looked like Lincoln, right? I mean, I kind of thought he was cool looking. I said, man, that's Lincoln, man, in the early days, you know, but, yeah. And, you know, I think how that worked, really, we had to do about three takes on that because Tommy.
On purpose.
Yeah. No kidding. Really. I didn't want to hit him. I just didn't want to do it. I mean, truthfully. And Tommy, hit him, man, just whatever, fired up. So Tommy hit him one time. Jarrett said, that wasn't good enough. Hit him again. Boom. Hit him again. So, yeah, I think it was about the third take that we said, okay, go with that one.
That's a residual potato for it not being Lance Russell.
Yeah. Exactly.
I want the A-team. We got Austin Idol and boom, drop this guy.
No, not bad. Not bad, Tom.
What, you know,
that ain't bad, man.
Tom does impressions. Tom, can you do your buddy Colt?
Austin, I think that it's the correct thing for you to fly with us tonight. Sorry to go for a hard subject so quick. I didn't mean to go there. It just came out of my stupid mouth.
No, I'm glad you did. That's so funny. Yeah. Oh, that it's funny. Yeah.
Now, the only The only thing that I got out of Buddy Colt that I could really say is that, like, a promo that he did about Kevin Sullivan. He's like, for the people that are skeptical about what mind control can do, I can remind you of the Reverend Jim Jones, who led many people to their death. So there is something to this.
Yeah, he was very, very fluid, wasn't he? Very exciting. Very exciting. Let me tell you something, Mr. Sully.
Tom, one of the things we've talked about so many times on the Super Podcast is the appearance of Demente Negro, a.k.a. The Big House, and I tried to click it, and it didn't work. Hold on.
I was going to say, was that a cue?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I messed
I'm
it up.
Lost. I'm lost.
No, numero uno.
There it is. There it is. Tom, what is your favorite part of that angle?
Of Demente?
Of Demente.
Truthfully, that Dennis redid it with me and Laura hitting Benoit with a plaque.
Were you in that when Dennis redid
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Oh, I yeah. That.
Yeah, because I was Laura's regular stooge when he would come up, and Dennis said, "Hey, man, we're going to put you both in masks, and we'll smash his plaque." And I'm like, "Why the fuck would you put me in a mask? Because nobody knows who I am anyway. There's no reveal there." I said it makes sense with Lawler, and Jesus, Lawler, Lawler has a reputation for landing once in a while. I never saw somebody hit so hard. He cracked Benoit with this thing, and it wasn't a gimmick plaque. It had some meat to it, and damn if he didn't blast him. And, of course, we all know what happened to Benoit, but he was, thankful afterward. I guess he enjoyed the snug work, if you will. But yeah, as far as the real angle, it's just it was brought back in my memory, because my memory's the shits. But Brian, as you know, Mr. Idol is a genius. He knows the date of everything and
I do
what happened. And I actually had forgotten that angle. And hearing your distinctive voice was a giveaway, obviously, to those of us in the know. I don't know about the Memfo crowd, but it's hilariously effective at this point when you hear your voice that was so idle, and the angle just continues on, and it just cracks me up every time I look at it.
Yeah, it was pretty good stuff way back then. It really was. And, it drew pretty well. It really did. It just kind of continued on. The only bummer about that, thinking back about it, of course, it was Saturday live television, right? And typically you would take whatever you did on that Saturday and you would go into Memphis, the Coliseum, on Monday. And I can't remember, but they had something there that where they couldn't use the building. So they went into the Cook County Convention Center, I believe that's downtown.
Yeah.
And they never go there. They never go there. And it typically never drew anyway. So, here I was thinking, like, oh man, we got this great thing going and we can't even get to the Mid-South Coliseum with it. So it's going to lose its deal. But it drew real well and that was on a Sunday, matter of fact. So you've got a day change from, you go from Monday to Sunday, and then you have a venue change. So it's like two strikes, but it still drew real well. Yeah.
That's a
testament to how strong it was and how strong you and Lawler were. I mean, when you really think about it, you guys were partners at different times. You got along, but the Lawler Idol feud went on for almost 10 years, hot and heavy, on and off, in and out. Yeah. And it's one of those lasting feuds. When you think of Memphis wrestling, there are several feuds that really stand out from that era, from that Jarrett leaving Nick Ulis era. And there's Dundee and Lawler, and there's Austin Idol and Jerry Lawler. To me, those are two of the top ones you think about.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big run, a long run, and as we all know, part-time gig. Yeah, part-time gig, man.
I have two questions, Brian, if you don't mind. I know I'm hijacking, but
no,
you can jump back in after I get them out. One's a little off the wall, so I'll do that now.
When you
changed your character from, and your whole deal from Mike McCord, I've seen the pictures and videos and so forth. You had the darker hair and a bigger body and everything like that. I actually, and I don't know if I ever asked Brian this. Brian, did you ever dye your hair?
I didn't. It's something I wanted to do, but I was in fear of doing it. Because I also have very dark eyebrows. And I remember when Tommy Rich dyed his eyebrows in 87. And I remember thinking, what a disaster. And there's no way I could do my hair and not do my eyebrows. And I didn't want to do my eyebrows. So that was one of the causes of my fear.
I kind of live vicariously through my wrestling friends that were, you know, advancing. And I was friendly with Eddie Gilbert when he would come through Philly. I always just thought it was, he always got every goddamn girl too. So that was a factor. But I was doing some heel managing for, it probably wasn't even Dennis, maybe Dennis then, but like, I remember going to West Virginia with Harley Lewis and other people like that. And I dyed my hair blonde and I did it a couple times and, God, I must've did it wrong. Cause it was painful as hell every time. Is there a correct way to do that where you don't just like lose your scalp?
Well, there probably is. I mean, I think it depends on what you use. I mean, are you, hey, wait a minute, hold on, let me back. Tom, are you insinuating that I color my hair?
Oh, I'm sorry. I what thought it was, a, I didn't know it was a modern miracle.
Where'd that come from? Brian, is this some kind of a trick question or something?
I didn't tell you that. He's very into this stuff. He's an expert on Vidal Sassoon. He's very into the history of the beauty industry. So don't take it too hard.
Okay, actually, I'm transgender. I've been waiting 47 years to come out. But man, no.
It's okay. Hey, we got a bathroom for you. You know, it's one bathroom fits all. I mean, come on. It's just crazy. It's all crazy now.
Right on. Right
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Yeah, I use something called Rue.
Rue, which I did not, so that explains why I was in pain.
Rue, yeah, it's real.
And you did it yourself?
Real gentle. Well, let me see if she's around. No, my girlfriend does it. I mean, my wife does it.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. But I don't do it very, I still do it, but I don't do it very often. You know, I do it maybe once every 8 weeks, couple months. Yeah.
A great payoff in my personal life is that West Virginia trip. Independence, I guess, in the 90s, maybe, I guess it was the 90s, they had guys like Snuka and the Iron Sheik that would kind of legitimize, they'd be on top and, you know, us curtain jerkers would be down the bottom, but we'd go to the bar, we'd all go to the same bar afterward, and we were literally in West Virginia, you know, with all the stereotypes and what have you, but they knew who Iron Sheik and Jimmy Snuka were, and I'm calling them Snuka. And a couple, the rest of us would be there, but I have this bleach blonde hair, and it kind of favored me. It worked at the time because I wasn't such a big fat ass like I am now, but
sounds to me like you need the Austin Idol Fitness and Nutrition booklet.
See, I'm a good setup guy. And yes, you do.
Cause we're not going to go with the fat ass thing forever.
Yeah. That gimmick isn't working with the ladies. I'll tell you that much. But at that particular time with the blonde hair, this girl thought that I was like of the left. They thought WWE was in town and they just happened to go to their hellhole shit corner bar, which just happened to be near the high school gym or wherever we worked. And within a half hour, I'm driving in these woods to this girl's house to say hello and hang out a little while.
Play cards.
Yeah. Fish. And yeah, speaking of. But anyway, yeah, the blonde hair worked in that aspect. But, you know, now I shave it bald because I'm going for a different look in my midlife crisis. But anyway, that was my off-topic weird question because I remember distinctly I used to burn the shit out of my head and always be like, why am I doing this? But secondly, it was not really a question, just a statement. When you were going through, I mean, you've had a storied career, but the thing we really gravitated to, a lot of us fans in the 80s, was what we already talked about, the whole thing that culminated in the hair match. And you familiar with Scott Hudson from WCW fame, briefly?
What's his name?
Scott Hudson. He's out of Georgia. He was a commentator.
No.
He agreed with me, and a lot of us kind of Meltzerites at the time, that It's probably in everybody of that era fan base wise top five things ever. And so whether you were consciously aware of it or not, your promos were popping those who were supposedly in the know. So thank you for that.
And, absolutely. I was just desperate to make money, Tom, you know, hustling, man, just trying to make some money, sell those tickets, you know. So I took my job seriously. I mean, I did take it seriously. I really, really did, man. I sure did. Yeah. I was lucky, but I was lucky because I had some good mentors in New York. Sure did. In 73. I mean, you know, you're spending time around Lou Albano and there's the Grand Wizard. I mean, see, they had some rap masters up there in 73, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a rap master. So all I had to do was just pay attention, you know, and just get a feel for their psychology. And, you know, they were just fearless. I mean, there you go. They were fearless. Boy, that Albano was great, man. I loved him.
Me too. Can I put Brian on the spot?
Yeah, sure. Put him on the spot.
Brian, can I put you on the spot?
Well, we can see where this goes.
I thought you almost channeled Lou Albano that one show we did where you were talking about Buddy Rogers. Do you have that in you?
I don't know. I could see if Suzanne could bring me up some vodka, and I might be able to channel him again.
Okay.
I don't know. I did it. What did I say? The Buddy Rogers. Where
you're a liar, liar, liar.
Buddy Rogers, you're a liar, 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 liar. Buddy Rogers. That was the famous Jimmy Snuka babyface turn.
Oh, Lou was so good, man. He was so good. He was so talented. Did I tell you, Brian, ever mentioned to you about when I caught him playing the piano?
No.
Yeah. True. This is a true story. I can't remember it was somewhere in Massachusetts. It's smaller venue. I really don't remember where it was, but anyway, I'd gotten to the building early. Yeah. And, you know, I was making my way back to the dressing room and I could hear this piano playing, you know, and man, it was beautiful. And it was Italian music, you know, I mean, I'm not kidding. It was absolutely beautiful. And I kept walking and I'm walking towards wherever the music's coming from because I want to see, man, who's playing this piano? And as I got closer, I didn't walk in the room, but I just kind of stuck my head around the frame of the door. And there was Lou. He had his back to me. And he was playing the piano and he was playing these Italian classics, you know, and I must have watched him for, I don't know, 10 or 12 minutes and he never stopped. And I'm telling you, he was playing beautifully. And then I said to him, I said, Lou, and he turned around real fast. I said, I didn't know you could play the piano. And he said, yeah, my sister plays at Carnegie Hall all the time. Yeah. Yeah, he says, she's classically trained. So he says, I just kind of come by it, you know, naturally. But yeah, I never knew that about the guy. You know, you look at him, you know, say, oh, goofball and whatever. But, you know, he had a lot of talent, you know. I mean, he was the black sheep of the family. You know, what his father, who was a doctor, I mean, did I mention this about what he invented?
What the father invented? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Lou's father was a physician. He was actually the one who invented the, I guess you would call them the forceps. Now this, we're going way back. And when they used to use them, I don't think they use them now, but I don't know. But forceps to deliver babies when they're having a difficult time coming out.
Yeah.
He's the guy who invented the forceps. Yeah. So Lou came from a really well-to-do family, very well-to-do. Yeah.
He's got that forceps money.
forcep, bicep, tricep, you know, whatever sep, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I work on Wednesdays at the gym.
Yeah, there you go. Intercept, you know, precept. But his daddy got killed in a car wreck going, it was in a foggy night. And I think it was on 95 and he somehow or another got screwed up in the fog and he was going up an exit where he thought he was going on to the 95, but he was actually going up an exit that was the wrong way. And someone was coming down. Yeah. And bang, boom, dead.
Wow.
There you go. Only.
The other side of Lou Albano. One night he's playing beautiful Italian songs on the piano. The next night he's calling Vince McMahon Sr. a stupid mick and getting fired before Bruno Sammartino can convince Vince Sr. to hire him back later that night.
Man, he was something else, boy. I wouldn't trade that. I mean, I wouldn't trade that time for anything. I mean, gosh, man, it was... If that wasn't my best time, it was certainly right up there in wrestling because you had the characters, you know, you had these guys, man, they were so good. And it was a small community then, back then, you know, it was a small community and it was just cool. It was very, very cool.
Well, that's the thing too. You were a young guy really getting his first big break in the wrestling business and you were welcomed into that fraternity. Moondog Main, Mr. Fuji, Tanaka, Stan Stasiak, Albano, Blassie, they all welcomed you in. So, you know, every time you talk to me about working in the Northeast, working for Vince McMahon Sr. and the WWF, you always have this warmth that comes through talking about that time.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I can remember when I did my first TV up there, and it, let me see, which would have been around March, so it's still chilly. As a matter of fact, I think it was snowing that night, and I got a ride with, I want to say Tony Gurria. No, I take that back. No. It was Vince. It was Senior and Junior. No, they insisted I go with them. Huh. It was Senior. Junior was driving. Senior was riding shotgun, and Ernie Roth was in the back seat. And with me, and we were driving up to, I guess that would have been Reading, okay. Reading, Pennsylvania, because we did TVs in Reading, right?
They did Philadelphia, Allentown, Hamburg. I'm actually not sure.
Oh, is Reading close to Allentown?
Reading's kind of halfway between Philly and Allentown, a little closer to Allentown.
Well, then I'm not sure. Okay, but either was right there in Allentown, or was on the, it could have been in Reading. It could have very well been in Reading. But regardless of the fact, they had a there was a Greek restaurant that they stayed. It was shut. They shut it down, and they kept it private for when Vince Sr. came in with his little entourage. So there was about, I don't know, because it was different, you know, a couple other cars, but maybe 8 or 10 of us. And the food was unbelievable. We go into a private room and everything is set up beautifully. And the food was unbelievable. And I'd had Greek food plenty of times, but I mean, this stuff was so good. I mean, everything they brought out, whether it was the grape leaves, you know, the domadas, you know, spanakopita, pastisa, whatever it was, lamb, I mean, beans, green beans, you know, Greek style. Oh, it was unbelievable. Yeah. And, my first TV up there, yeah, Vince and Junior, the Wiz, I rode with them. And I think, when I think back about it, I think that Vince and Junior probably wanted to get a feel for me. Like, is this guy going to talk? Is he going to stooge on anybody? Has he got any dirt he's going to spill or anything? But nothing. I mean, they asked me a bunch of questions. I'd answer them, you know, and first time I'd met him, you know, So it was just, it was an interesting trip. It was a very interesting trip. It was very cordial, but I could just feel it. They were waiting for me to say something about somebody, whether it was Eddie Graham or whoever. But I never cracked, you know, I just straight paper all the way.
And you're Vince, wise, Bob.
Yeah, Vince Sr. was close with Eddie Graham, so that is interesting.
Yeah, I mean.
You're wise beyond your years as far as that goes, because a lot of guys early on would be spouting off and saying something they regretted. So
you better believe it, Tom. And I felt that. I felt that they were trying to pull something out of me. They were just waiting for me to say something. I never did. And I think they respected that, to know that, hey, this guy is going to, you know, he's minding his own business and he ain't trash mouthing anybody, which I didn't do and hardly ever did.
I have one more to sneak in, Bri, if you don't mind, and a Mr. Idol.
One more.
This is something that you probably won't remember, though. When in Philadelphia, you were in Philadelphia a lot of times back then, correct?
Yeah.
I discovered that the boys, because in the 80s, about 84-ish, I discovered it when I got my driver's license and started stooging and stuff, that the boys stayed at the old Best Western. Do you remember staying there?
No, never stayed over in Philly.
Okay. I didn't figure that because it was different era, but that was like the go-to spot after the matches. And at that point, fans really didn't know. They weren't really smart to the business, but they didn't really know where the guys were or anything. And somehow my dumb ass found out. But I always used to remember Joe Frazier coming there every time you guys were in Philly and hanging out. I just saw a picture of him in my room with me from back in the day. So it reminded me of the old Best Western. It's since been toured down and everything, but that's where I met Andre. That's the first time I met Terry Funk too, Brian. And he told me to ask Jimmy Hart when I asked him for a picture. In other words, he blew me off, but
yeah. But Tom, let me ask you, but that must have been when they wrestled at the Spectrum.
Yeah,
because sure. When I was there, see, it was the old Philly Arena down there on.
Oh, third, okay, yeah.
Third, was that third or fourth?
It was in Market Street. 48th or 46th and Market, I believe.
Yeah, I'd already given my notice, and I was in Philly, and I got there a little bit late, and I was looking for a place to park my car. Man, I couldn't find any place to park my car. And I parked my car on the sidewalk. I mean, right there, there's it's right there. The arena is right there. I mean, so my car's on the sidewalk. I came out after the matches and I had a ticket and it was $100 ticket. And that's 1973, $100 ticket. And I thought, man, I said, I ain't going to pay it because I'm leaving in a few weeks anyway. I'm not going to pay it. But I thought, that's pretty cool. It's $100, man, $100 ticket. I'd never seen a $100 ticket. So sure enough, I was booked in Philly for the very last time before I left and said, you know what? I got to do it, man. I parked my car back up on the sidewalk. I came out and I swear this is the truth. There was a ticket on this guy, he knew, and he was going to get me a $300 parking ticket. $300. Yeah. Of course, I
73 never, too.
73. I never paid it. You know, of course I never paid it, but I thought, yeah, man, top that one. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Top that one. Yeah. I kept the ticket for a long time. Yeah.
And for all the fans out there who wonder why Austin Idol never went back to the WWWF or the WWF, that's why, because that ticket now with interest, Austin Idol is in debt to the Philadelphia Police Department for about $50,000 as we speak right now.
Most wanted, right? Yeah. With my luck, yeah, they'd arrest me. Yeah. Yes.
And that is the true story why the gimmick got changed.
Yeah, that's why he changed his look. So he can go to Philadelphia. He wanted to go back to that Greek restaurant. He needed a win.
Oh, man. Well, it was good time.
I'll tell you what, Heartthrob, I know you don't have all night, but let me add the next guest before you leave so you can say hello to him before you go. And let me try this right now.
Okay.
I'm going to add people, in this person's number.
People, is that plural?
It's person. I will add this person, but the person, thing is, it says add people. It doesn't say add person.
Waffling a little bit there, sir.
Your Honor, please strike that from the record.
We do a lot of striking.
Can I approach the bench?
We try not to let him hold anything against us.
All right, we're trying this other number now. Let's see what happens here. It is ringing. Let's see if anyone answers.
This is kind of a sweepstakes deal here, or what?
It is. It's like Publisher's Clearinghouse.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Brian, did I didn't get the okay.
Hello.
The okay from Swifty.
You didn't get the okay from your agent to speak to me today?
I didn't get the okay from Swifty Flanagan that we had made a deal for the show. He told me he was going to send you a telegram. That's easier for him because he has to go to the library to use the internet.
Look, I emailed him all day. I sent him text messages. It's not my fault if he doesn't get back to me. I mean, you're going to lose business deals if you keep associating with this riffraff who doesn't even respond to people.
you can't send him text messages. You have to send him Western Union. Because his office is temporarily that newsstand on the corner of 42nd and Main.
Oh, yes, the Paul Heyman Memorial Newsstand. I know it very well, yes.
Yes, yes.
Is this Mr. Cornetti?
Who is this?
Is this Mr. Cornetti? Mr. Cornetti?
Is this, oh my God, is this the one, the only, the universal heartthrob himself?
Mr. Cornetti, we still have unanswered questions. We're going to get to them in the future, hopefully.
Talk about a terrible rib, Brian Last. You put me on the line with the two greatest talkers in the history of the business.
How many people are on this phone? What is this?
It's a party line.
Is this some kind of? It's a party line, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, Brian's got a new.
Everybody, hang up. I've got to call the hospital. I've got an emergency. Hang up the party line.
This is Hooters Central.
Well, Jimmy, you figured out the Universal Heartthrob Austin Idol. Can you figure out who the other person on the line with us right now is?
Dun, 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 dun,
well, hello, Mr. Cornett.
Not if he's going to hum the goddamn Jeopardy gimmick in my...
All right. Guess number two. Speak right now so Mr. Cornett can try to guess who you are, your identity.
Well, I'll make it pretty easy. Our mutual friend Kenny Boland just got rid of a lot of fluid from his health condition in Louisville, which would be similar to a gimmick name that Dennis Carluzzo put on myself and somebody else.
Oh, for God's sake. All right. A roundabout way of saying piss boy, Mr. Robinson, good evening to you, sir.
How are you, Jimmy?
Oh, for God's sake. I didn't know I was going to have to fucking work this hard. Swifty, he set me up again. He told me if I just did this one show for him, then, you know, then he'd get me booked in the Catskills.
Oh, the old Poconos.
Yeah, that was the rib. It's our little Star Wars thing that we do around holidays, but it's the snow. What's it called, Bri?
It's the snow day Star Wars. Was going to be St. Patrick's Day Star Wars, but I threw out my back shoveling. So it's now snow day Star Wars, and you are part of a cast of millions here on the Super Podcast. And we are just bombing people's phones.
Yeah, well, what are your download numbers there now? Have you got the that's just the pre-downloads yet so far, right?
Yes, the pre-downloads are going exceedingly well.
It's all based on the buzz.
You should have heard my riveting questions for the first time I talked to Austin Idol about how he dyed his hair.
Yeah, deep, very, very deep.
Wait a minute. Of all the things that you can speak to. Or speak about to a legend and a mind and a talent like Austin Idol, you're wanting hairdressing tips.
Yes, that was one of like seven or eight until Brian cut me off and took the shine off.
Dennis would have slapped you.
He sure would have, sir.
He was, hey, dude, what the fuck? Don't worry about his fucking hair. Look, he's a legend. Look at him.
This is you fucking Mark.
I can't do New Jersey accents. It all sounds like Southern New Jersey.
Tom does a good Dennis Carluzzo. Tom, do your Dennis.
Hey, Jimmy, man. I'm getting some side pussy tonight in fucking Debbie.
That's perfect.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's great.
Well, Heartthrob, I know you don't have all night, so feel free to hang up on us at any time.
Click. Okay, well, I really appreciate you having me on. I mean, it's been a true thrill.
Sounds like it.
I mean, yeah, this is ecstasy. Yeah, you don't buy this on the street corner. I mean, this is ecstasy. Yeah.
Idol.
Yes, sir.
What happened was you asked for this program to be a veritable who's who of professional wrestling, but instead it was a veritable who's that?
What's that, right?
Who? Who?
What's that? Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, Brian asked me earlier, and he said, 15 minutes. Now we're at 44 minutes and 20 seconds.
You don't chin like that. He gets you.
You've tagged me in so you can get away.
That's right. You're the hot tag.
The cold tag.
The cold tag. Hey, I'm going to bail and leave it to you guys. And, hey, Jim, thank you for being on the old show here a while back. It was really great.
Well, thank you for being on my old show, because we're still getting compliments about that. It's a great team. It's incredible. It's like when Martin and Lewis teamed up together. It was magic.
Martin Lewis. Is that also like Lewis and Clark?
Well, we were able to explore new grounds in podcasting. They should send us to the money pit in Nova Scotia. We could get to the bottom of anything.
This is becoming the Sammy Maudlin show all over again over here.
Oh, for fuck's sake. What a show here. I wish somebody would hit me in the head so I could see some stars. Fuck.
I can't take it. I can't take it.
Yeah, Dan, no. Do you ever, every once in a while, do you remind the listeners who's on this call? Because they probably forgot. As a matter of fact, they had forgotten these people before they knew who was going to be on the air. So
I make them rewind to the beginning and start all over again.
Oh, that's funny. They don't know, do they, huh?
Just if they've just turned over from another station.
It's the Oofdus Gooftus Hour.
All right.
Okay, man. Somebody have me.
Brian, I did hate carrying these two guys because they can't speak very well. But
No.
I came in to do the Maury Amsterdam fucking bit, right? And this is the fucking slapstick portion of the program, and then later on he'll have the fucking Senior Winces and his fucking hand puppet.
Senior Winces. The most important, I think, before I leave is we must remember and remind these people about the Austin Idol Fitness and Nutrition booklet, only on AustinIdolLive.com. You got to go there, folks. Let's get in shape together. We don't want to end up like these people, do we? No. Look, if you don't take care of yourself, you're going to end up like these people.
Yeah, fuck. I ate in Austin Idol's health food restaurant. He served me alphabet soup. I spelled out help.
Please help me. Like big welts came over your stomach, right? Help. Okay, guys, I'm out. So just get rid of me.
All right. Dump me. Okay, let me hold on. Let me, I'll actually hang up on you. This is the first time I've ever hung up on.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm used to it.
All right. Say adios, Austin.
Adios, Austin.
All right, hung up on him. I just hung up on Austin.
Well, it's about time. What the fuck? Yeah. I thought he'd never leave.
Jimmy, how are you?
Well, how do you think I am? What the fuck?
You sound in a pretty cheery mood.
Oh, I tell you, I got problems. Oh, it's like a heaviness. Every morning I wake up, it's like a heaviness. I go, hi, heaviness.
Well, we do have the piss boy himself, TR Shock, Tom Robinson on the line, the master of wrestling impressions, and he just impressed Austin Idol. I asked Tom to do his Buddy Colt impression. He does.
Don't even say what I said.
He does the same Buddy Colt impression every time. He does this Buddy Colt talking about Kevin Sullivan, and instead he decided to make some joke about flying in an airplane with Buddy Colt.
What is the impression? We're going down.
that was what went to my brain. I said, what the fuck am I saying right now? But
That'll definitely go down as one of the great moments in show history when you decided to do a Buddy Colt impression, Austin Idol, but that you decided to do it about flying an airplane. That's brilliant.
I never knew what was going to come out whatever. I thought I was talking to like Jeff Baldwin and John McAdam. I didn't know you were going to ambush me with Cornette and Idol, for Christ's sake. But I am happy. I am very grateful, though.
Wait a minute. What is this? This was an ambush on your part, Brian?
Yeah, basically I ambush all the regulars from the Super Podcast. They have no idea who I'm going to put them on the line with. They have no idea who they're going to talk to you, which probably explains the last two times you got an answering machine message from me and someone doing a Jimmy Valiant or a Lanny Poffo impression and John McAdam and whoever else was on the line in that moment.
You know, you're a frustrated Mark Goodson and Bill Todman. You're a goddamn... You should be. If Merv was still alive, you'd be Merv's fucking right hand man.
I want to be to Merv.
You'd be Merv's right hand. You'd be right there when all the ideas sprang forth.
I don't want to be there when anything's springing forth on Merv.
Yeah, $100 million empire. You'd be spinning the fucking numbers on Jeopardy, for God's sake. You're a game show fucking guru.
I do my best.
Jimmy, what's the what's the weather down there in Louisville?
It's fucking cold. Okay, thank you very much. It's fucking cold.
No snow, though?
We didn't get snow, thank goodness. But it's cold. It was 75 degrees last Thursday in my driveway, out in a T-shirt with little Harley Quinn romping, buds starting to come up on the trees. And over the weekend, it turned bitterly cold. It was in the mid-20s. And it has been that way since then, 20s and 30s during the course of the day. I'm very displeased about this because I had a wonderful propane year going.
Yeah.
It's a game I play every year to see how little propane that I can use in the course of the year. And I go through the house edging the thermostat down 1 degree or turning the heat off in a room completely if I leave it. And I almost had these bastards beat. And now this cold snap comes in. They're going to ruin my fucking record year. Otherwise than that, it's been nice.
Well.
Glad I asked.
Yeah. Jim, do you remember the first time you met Tom?
No.
I try to forget.
I didn't even realize he was around for about a year and a half.
A lot of people didn't realize he was around, but I can remember one time.
I can't remember the exact first time, but I remember very early because you were always there. That helped me. Do you remember the first time I met you?
I think it was. It could have been before because I had been around when you guys were coming through. And, you know, Philly, everybody was around. But
well, that's basically from the first couple of times that we started coming to Philly. Dennis and Frank pretty much had either me or all of us all the midnight, whether throwing us in Gino Moore's van to get us out of the back of the building, but they brought us from the hotel and back and Ribbit and all that stuff. So whoever was with them was whoever we were with.
Yeah, I was part of that eclectic group. It was a very select group, but we were allowed access basically through you, permission to give Dennis permission to get through way before 9/11, a private part of the airport where Stardust and the other private plane would land. And I remember Dennis just turning around going, "Pissy, don't fuck this up. Just be cool." And so we were on our best behavior. And
it was like a bale of fucking drugs from Mexico was coming in. He's like, "Pissy, don't fuck this up, man. Be cool. Don't
and
start
I think
shooting."
I think the same result would have happened if we did fuck it up. But
And I remember, as a matter of fact, also one time I think we stranded. Who was it? Manny Fernandez and somebody else didn't have anybody to take them.
I got blamed. No room. I think I got blamed, and I blamed it on Joe Lilly. But you guys, like you said, it was pretty steady Ribbit for a while. And then I guess I earned my wings a little bit by not crashing or not saying anything too stupid. And then if Bobby and Stan wanted to skip on the eating and go drink a beer or Stan see a woman or something, I would get them and go the other way, and you guys would go to the Ribbit, or, you know, we'd all go to the Ribbit or whatever. But I remember the first time, I don't think you fully trusted these two idiots, Joe and I, and you piled in with Frankie and Dennis, and we got the actually it was an honor to drive Ivan Koloff and Paul Jones, but their sidekick was the legendary Tejo Khan.
Oh my God.
That was our first ride, who stayed in character through the whole way to the Civic Center, which was...
Did he speak to you in Mongolian?
Yeah, how does Tejo Khan stay in character, Tom?
Yeah.
He just was very quiet, and I was trying to be, like, I was like a first-year Observer reader, and I was like, "Hey, Mr. Khan, you're a very great worker," you know, which is ridiculous, but I was just trying to talk Carney in some form.
Actually,
of all the people.
I don't recall Tejo was a loud, boisterous fellow anyway, so he was probably...
Yeah, he was seemingly looking out the window like, I hope I just get to the fuck the building.
Yeah.
But
Tom, I don't know if Jim knows the story. I know you told it on the show before, but tell him about that first night in the hotel when you met Dusty.
Oh, yeah. I was, You guys, if you guys were there, you were like responsible enough to go to the room, because I did not see you guys, but it was off the top of my head, Dusty and
What hotel was it?
It was what was the old Marriott, now the Hilton.
Okay, and so you, because you didn't see us very early on after we stayed there a few times in 86, I determined that it was not only $30 a night cheaper, but probably a whole lot better for the boys if we stayed down at the Red Roof Inn. And so the guys may go down there to have a drink every once in a while, but they would take a cab back up and avoid some of the debauchery.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a weeknight. It was a snowstorm, like a Tuesday, when it might have been the very first show. I heard Tully Blanchard on a radio show local inviting women to the Marriott. And I wasn't a woman, but I said, hey, I might as well go down and meet Tully Blanchard. He's a hero of mine. And sure enough, there was Tully and Dusty and Pez Watley and Wahoo. And, you know, everybody's at the bar. Not many normal citizens, but it was a weeknight crowd. Dusty was in a mink. And
oh, God, yes, I remember that night. The night that he and Magnum wore their matching minks to Philly.
Yeah. And we were running around like children that we were. I believe we were – I think we might have been 15 and not even driving yet. We, much like the VCR era, we got our cars and licenses just to be around the boys and be more valuable and et cetera, et cetera. So we're running around literally out of place. We shouldn't have been in the bar. I mean, it's ridiculous to think of now, but at the time we thought it was great. Like, you know, everybody's being – the heels were being kind, of course. Babyface is kind of distant, and Dusty's just observing. And in my deluded, delusional world, I thought that the American Dream thought that I was like the next, I don't know, Luthez or something, because I thought that he was – you know, following our actions as if we were like, these guys are cool. And he gives me kind of a wink and a facial expression and a motion to come over to him. And I go, I believe it was Joe Lilly. It might have been a friend of mine, Paul, who will probably pop for hearing his name on the air. But I walked over, being the senior member of this pimply face crew, and I whispered, like, Dusty's calling me over. This is awesome. So I walked over and I said, yeah, Dust. And he says, hey, kid. And he pulled me in closer. And I says, yes, sir. And he says, why don't you take your friends, go fuck off and take your friends with you. And I didn't process it till like after I turned around. And Dusty told me to go fuck off. So we took the hint and we kind of just you know, got out of there at that point. But yeah, that was the first words the American Dream ever said to me. And later on, he gained at least a trust to allow me to be around. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah, later on, he quit telling you to go fuck off and take your friends with you. Your relationship improved from there.
It can only go up. That's true.
Christ.
And one thing that never made the 605 podcast and super podcast, I should say, that I always been wanting to talk about, because I never really explained it to you. Not that it's going to matter worth a shit anyway, but I'd like to get it off my chest. After I went through that whole debauchery of getting down to 109 pounds and everything, I'm always thankful for you guys.
You're
showing up and helping me out.
Your illness, where you nipped up from death.
Yes.
As a dream machine would say, it was nearly some sad singing and slow walking.
I don't do as good a cornet as any. Like, I realize nobody does a good cornet anymore now that I hear them. Everybody just talks in a high-pitched voice when they try to do you. But so forgive me if I butcher your voice, but I remember the first time I saw you after that benefit was about a year later. And, you know, I got a different diagnosis and started, you know, trying to get back to myself. And you were like, Jesus Christ, at least you could have died.
I said, Jesus Christ, We were so nice to you. At least you could have done a diet.
That's not even the best line I heard, Tom. John McAdams said on the show that at the after party after the show, you know, Jim was there, Dennis was there, everyone's there. And at one point you just kind of said, oh, you know, it kind of stinks. It's my benefit show and I'm not even going to get laid. And he said, Jimmy turned around and he said, Tom, it's a benefit show, not a miracle show.
That's true, and I actually have some of that on videotape, as Jimmy might annoyingly remember. I always had that big old thing on my shoulder saying, Jim, is it cool if I tape some of this? But, yeah, I have that tape's pretty special because Hildebrand's in it, and the legendary Mike Lano's in that room, and Dave Meltzer, and Cactus, and Brian, or I already said Hildebrand, and McAdam, and a lot of other good people.
What a daggum collection. What an assortment. What the land of misfit toys all together in one place.
Oh, it sure was. But you held court, man. You were funny as hell still to this day. Some of your lines held up. I was watching it the other night.
Well, I just got to say one thing. You remind me of when you almost died. Reminded me of it. Actually, it doesn't really have anything to do with that story, except it's a funny line. Remember when Buddy Roberts was supposed to have died back in the mid 80s? Rumors went around Buddy Roberts, the Freebirds, died, right? Me and Bobby Eaton, Dennis Condrey, were going into Dallas for Crockett's first show out there, the Western Expansion, and going to Reunion Arena and walk in the locker room, and there stands Buddy Roberts. And he looked like Buddy Roberts usually looked, right? He was not dressed in a tuxedo. And fucking Dennis Condrey looked at him and said, Buddy, we heard you was dead. And he waited a second. He said, I see they was right.
Well, you mentioned misfit toys, Jimmy. I know you don't have all night. I know you don't have a lot of time. But before you do go, and you could hang up on us or I can hang up on you, it's up to you. But I want to add the next person and have you at least say hello to him before you leave. And you are one of the great bookers. And I want you to talk to another great booker. So give me one sec. Let me add this person. I'm clicking add people.
Is this Booker T?
I'm entering the phone number. I said great bookers. And calling the number.
Boy, right now. And earlier on my show, he was hot at TNA. He's on the warpath this week.
No, nothing against Booker T. Nothing against.
I'm sorry, not TNA,
Brian,
but Impact.
Lasto.
Baldrin the Booker, you're on the air.
Oh,
I'm
for
so
God's sake.
Oh, for God's sake, back at you. I won't discuss the fact
I followed a star. I thought I was going to hand off to a star. Instead, I'm handing off to a fucking black hole.
So much for expectations.
Now, hello, Jeff. How are you?
How you doing, Jimmy?
I've done about 30 minutes, so now it's your turn. My community service is up.
Well, I'm hoping you get credit for time served.
No, I was fucking Jackie Mason in the Catskills on the show tonight. So it's time to turn serious, and I know that if anybody can be serious, even when they don't mean to, it's you.
Well, that's certainly true. I've never been known for my comedy.
Jim, before you do go, I am curious, you know, you are someone who left WCW in 1990, and you certainly saw how frustrating it was to be a part of that, let alone watch it at home. And that's right around the time that Jeff's column in The Observer started, where he started doing his fantasy booking. Did you read it at the time? What did you think of it?
Oh, yeah, I loved it because it was better than what they were doing. I definitely read it every week. And It was to everyone's frustration that for some reason, even the sum of the parts, when they would have a booking committee composed of geniuses, it would still be like the reverse of the Geppetto theory, where little fucking evil elves came in and cobbled together horrible booking in the middle of the night, changed all their work. Because no matter how smart everybody was, if it was WCW and Jim Herd, it still came out like shit.
I thought maybe Jimmy liked it because I put him over in the thing.
Well, that didn't hurt. That didn't hurt. But no. Still, it was interesting and a better use of everybody, and just you know. So it was a topic of conversation in a locker room at that point among more than one person that they wanted to read the Observer to find out what the company should be doing.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. Thank you.
Hey, and Jeff, do you know the guy that does the Florida compilations? He has a long name like Cavalavalavalier.
Yes, Bobby, I believe it's Van Kevlar or something like that.
Yeah, there he is. There he is. I'm trying to get more of his books, but all he had was a post office box. I wrote him and got no response. Send out an APB. Tell him Celebrity in Wrestling is looking for more of his yearbook.
I'm actually Facebook friends with him. I will certainly reach out to him on your behalf.
What are these books?
Get on his Facebook.
What are these
your
books?
Facebook friends, for fuck's sake.
You've never seen those books now.
You're on Facebook, for heaven's sake.
You've never seen those books, Brian?
No. What are they? Actually, I'm not familiar with them.
No, he's put out a compilation of different years in Florida with championship wrestling from Florida. I mean, it's done like 1973, 1980. And what he does is he's gone back into the – I don't know if he goes to the library or what. And he does research and pulls up old newspaper articles and newspaper clippings, and he – compiles an entire year's worth, and
from all the towns in the territory, or as many as can be determined.
Yeah, it's a fantastic historical perspective on the promotion.
Yeah,
Brian's on this already before you have a chance to get on offline, and Jeff has a chance to contact him.
But yeah, no, I saw him in maybe Charlotte or one of the fan fests one year, and he gave me a few of them, and I'd got another one in the mail, but I never had his number or his email, just a address of some kind, which I wrote a while back and never heard.
Yeah, they're as good as anything you'll ever see.
Well, now that's a broad and blanket statement.
Okay, I'll take a set.
Jimmy, question from the gallery, from the piss gallery. The thing I posted on Twitter the other night was the angle with Paulie that you talked about, where you figured one of your best interviews of all time was after that. I can't find it. Do you have that available, or do you, Brian, where I could watch that again?
Oh, God, I have the tape somewhere, as you know, along with 5,000 other ones. But, Brian, do you know the quick, easy way to find something like that on the internet?
It's on the WWE Network, if that's what you want to say.
Are you talking about the one where he comes out with the bloody jacket?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Did you start out, I've been beaten up, I've been busted open, blah, 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 blah. Was that the same interview?
Yeah, that's it.
That popped me from my living room at the time. So
yeah, when I silenced the fans who were chanting for me with raising my hand and a gesture, and they silenced like Moses parting the Red Sea, and then I gave the big go home, and to a climactic throwing of babies in the air, the entire studio was at a fever pitch. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that definitely was a killer. It was worth babies. Worth babies flying, for sure.
Well, and actually, they caught all but two of them, so it was okay.
Jimmy, I know you don't have all night, but thank you for appearing here on...
Well, if you knew that, then why did you fucking keep me on so long?
This is the first time we actually got you. Usually we get your answering machine. But
I stayed up. You know, I'm a senior citizen. I go to bed early, get up early. I have to piss early in the morning. And the last couple of times, I went to sleep on it. But I was able to keep myself awake... just for this specific occasion.
Well, thank you for doing that. Do you want me to hang up on you, or are you going to hang up on me?
Oh, hey, go ahead and give me the honor. I'll hang up on you. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Give some the power.
All right, so now it's just us. Me, Baldrin the Booker, and TR Shock. What's going on? Did you listen to Baldrin co-hosting this week? He was great, Tom.
Yes, I did. I'm getting a little scared that I might get pushed out. He's doing too damn good. You better stay at that courthouse, Mr. Baldrin the Booker.
Brian's already told me he's decided he doesn't want McAdam on anymore.
Yeah, you filled the historical demographic of the co-hosting chair. No, great job, in all seriousness.
I appreciate that. You know what's funny? As you were talking to Jimmy, I remembered, you know, the blow-off to that angle with Paul E., was supposed to be their match at the Bash in 89. And what happened was they had set up this whole match, and he and Paulie had worked up this whole match that they thought was going to steal the show. Before in Philadelphia, you remember what happened the night before in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I just happened to be back there when it went down.
Yeah, they were having it, Brian. If you didn't know this, they were having a match against the Freebirds, and they did a deal where they chased the Freebirds out of the ring, and Gordy picked up a chair and threw the chair towards the ring, and in dodging the chair, that's when Cornette blew out his knee.
I did know that, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. That was the blow-off, or, you know, supposed to be the blow-off. But the other, I guess the first blow-off was supposed to be the Midnight versus Midnight Loser Leaves Town match, where they were going to beat Randy
Rose.
Yes. And then Dennis Condrey no-showed. So they had to keep Randy Rose, even though he lost.
Since you guys are longtime friends, sort of, and I admit just about everything on this damn show and then regret it later at times. But that particular 2-day stretch where his knee went out and so forth. And by that point, I had been an established stooge, if you will, where I had a bit of a relationship with Jimmy and the Midnights. And he was still married to his ex, Kelly, at that time, I remember. And Dennis, myself, and the whole caravan were going to Baltimore, but it was in jeopardy, as you mentioned. And we sat there, and this is a tremendously embarrassing revelation for me, but it wasn't known, at least to me, if the match was going to happen, because they didn't know how serious that was. And when I shouldn't say this. This is so embarrassing. I was sitting there amongst our friends, and if Dennis would have saw it, I'd have never lived it down. But what the hell? I'm going to put it out there now. When the famous Midnight Express theme music came on, I actually had a tear roll down my face, a tear of some kind of strange emotion, like, you know, Jimmy just made my day from being such a heroic, like, who's, I'm the basketball player in the goddamn Madison Square Garden, and I should know.
Willis Reed.
It was like a Willis Reed moment for me, like where I was vicariously living through Cornette to go do a shitty match with Paulie.
Are you a sissy?
I certainly was.
Wrestling is an emotional business. There's no question about it.
I definitely did have a tear come out. I didn't want to tell that to him, though, so yeah. I'm glad he's gone.
Well, before we get going too much further, let's add one more person to this mix here. So bear with me one moment. Okay, and now we're ringing the next person to be added. Let's see if he picks up quickly. Let's see if we have to wait.
Hello?
John McAdam.
Hey, how are you, man?
It is now officially the reader's page of the 1988 Wrestling Observer. I have Jeff Baldwin, Tom Robinson, and John McAdam on the same line.
How are you guys?
What's really amazing is that you can actually get McAdam to pick up the phone.
That's called a hint, Jeff.
It's March Madness. He's expecting his bookie.
So how are you tonight, Mark Puncher?
If we tried to do this tomorrow night, there's no way he picks up the phone.
No shot. What's up, Johnny Mac? I haven't spoke with you in forever, as in speaking.
Yeah, 1999.
God, you remember these damn dates.
June.
he had to get that order of protection. How could he ever forget?
Yeah, true.
That was the night I drove to Jamie Ward's house and bought about 1,200 videotapes from him. And we had, like, heavy rain, and it flooded, and it took me 14 hours to get from Philly back to New Hampshire.
That I do remember. You weren't the usual jovial John McAdam that I was used to. You did...
Was going through a divorce.
Ah, that on top of it, huh?
Why, what else is going on?
I've never done that.
Me neither. At least you ended up getting it right, Jeff Baldwin, correct?
For
well,
now.
This time seems to be taking, yes.
And Brian's next.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
So were we all at one point.
No, but there's a big difference. I'm with a Colombian woman. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, you don't? Yeah. No, you don't want to mess with them.
Trust me.
Oh,
you don't want the Colombian necktie.
Yeah.
Well, John, you and I are legally allowed to get together ourselves, so we won't leave each other anymore.
Well, I don't know about that, but
we don't have to touch. We could just watch basketball and wrestling.
So, can I tell you guys the story about one of my weddings and how John McAdam figured into it?
Oh boy!
So, you know, the 605 podcast is, for a lot of people, their church. And like any good church, I'm here to make a confession. So I was getting ready to marry my second wife. It was 1991. John McAdam, ace tape trader. I called him up and I said, John, I need you to do me a favor on the sly. And he said, of course, what's that? Well, I asked him to tape a bunch of football games with me because I had made a pledge to my wife that I wouldn't tape any of the football games on the day that I got married. Because she decided to get married during a September of 91, which is the, you know, the prime college football season. And John sent me the tapes. Wife never knew about it. About 3 years after that, my wife goes to pick out a tape to record some TV show, and she notices that I put on the side of the tape, September 28th, 1991, and it was some football game. She comes in and she says, what's this? And I said, oh, what are you talking about? Immediately, I know I'm busted. She says, this is the day we got married. What were you told me you weren't going to tape any games that day. And I said, oh, honey, here's the story. It's my good friend, John McAdam, who knew I was getting married that day and figured I'd probably want a copy of the game. Wasn't that nice of him?
That's tremendous.
What a guy.
1991, so that's the year Tennessee came back 35-0 to beat Notre Dame.
I don't think we needed to bring that story up, but thank you so much.
Well, what was it, though, with her, Jeff? Was it, I mean, was it some sort of like she's putting her foot in the ground, no football? You're not allowed to even find out about the football games that happened on our wedding day?
She felt like this one day should be for her, and I should just not care about football that day. And thankfully, my good friend John up in New Hampshire decided, hey, you know, he's getting married. I bet she wants me to tape a bunch of games for him. So here we are 26 years later. I confess I asked John to tape the games for me. So now I've been to confession. I feel better.
Oh, I have an eerily similar story. It doesn't involve McAdam.
It involves John?
Well, don't tell it then.
It doesn't involve John, but I, as I've alluded to in some of my posts, but currently I've abstained from any kind of sports gambling, but it was quite a part of my life.
I thought you were going to tell us you're abstaining from something else. So.
Well, that may be too until the test results are in. But anyway, I digress. November 24th, 1996, if McAdam knows whoever played that day, was the birth of my one and only daughter, who's now in Florida, living it up on spring break, 20 and a half almost. And
there was, the drinking age is 21 in Florida?
Yeah, she has a fake ID. I hope she doesn't get in trouble.
Okay.
But anyway, she's in Tampa. But as her mother, who I don't really get along with anymore, but no need to bring her up, I went to the delivery, which was beautiful. But I also had this little demon on the other shoulder that cramped the moment a bit. I remember Boomer Esiason was the quarterback for Arizona, and I had a $500 reverse bailout on the Cardinals that day. I don't know if you want to look back for the result, but I think the only thing I was happy about was the birth of my child that day. I was half watching the TV while my kid was being born.
It's truly a tender moment.
You know, this is how Tom and I were very alike, but we're very different. Tom apparently liked to bet on sports. My biggest regret in life is not being a bookie when I was in high school and college, because they win and the bettors lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the dumbest thing I ever did. But anyway.
Did any of you guys ever have a professional wrestling event interfere with one of life's great moments, whatever that may be?
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, I've got one. In 97, I called Jeff Bowdrin, and I'm like, hey, I'm coming to Florida. Come to a Marlins game with me. You know, I'm bringing your wife. I'm bringing my wife. And he's like, there's an indie wrestling show. I'm like, Jeff, my wife, I can't do that.
Who was
I was doing what Brian said not to do.
Yeah, you drinking into the microphone, Tom?
Yeah, I took a drink. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's the Snow Day Star Wars show. You get away with it.
Yeah,
as long as he doesn't start stuttering.
Yeah, we're still trying to find out what happened to good old Stutter and Tommy Rich. We're looking for him as we speak.
Yeah, well, Tom, your cadence is totally in TR neck mode.
Is it?
I
fade in and out of characters all day, but that's kind of a mental issue more than a show issue.
Hey, Tom, did you notice that the one thing originally, the one joke you told that I thought may be a problem was in the show, and then this past week's show with Jeff as the co-host was the longest show I had ever done by far. And in fact, it was so long and the file was so big that it was too big to upload. I had to shave off like 10 megs of data to make the show capable of being disseminated. So I had to shave a little bit here, a little bit there. I shaved a little bit of Impressionist Jim Ross. I had to shave a little bit of a couple other things. And then I was like, I'm going to have to hit TRNAC. And it worked out because it was the one joke I thought would offend a whole bunch of people. So that's the joke.
Yeah, not that it wasn't funny in our strange way, but you weren't too confident that that would go over in a civil manner. Speaking of which, we brought you up earlier, Jeff, and I wanted to maybe delve into this a little more just to get some clarification. Missy Hyatt's not a fan of the show, I'm gathering.
Apparently not. I a while ago I had reached out to her about the possibility of either doing a dinner with her or having her come on the show, and she kind of fluffed it off. No, not interested. And then she said, I'm looking for podcasts that I can listen to on my drive. And I suggested she listen to the one that I just happen to be a co-host on, because, you know, I figure that's some good quality entertainment right there. Sure. And she made a rather derogatory comment about my columns, saying, reality check, do you remember the one guy that voted for you as Booker of the Year that year? I was planning to come back and mention that, from what I understood, it was more than one guy. But, you know, who am I to cast stones?
It's too bad. You know, Missy, believe it or not, she knows her stuff.
Yeah, no, she'd be great on the show.
Oh, we were putting her over earlier, Brian and I, and it's just I would think the bulk of this would be her cup of tea, the bulk of this show.
It's one of a few things. It's either because she's friends with Lance Storm, she's offended by the fact that I've let Lance Storm have it, or she's offended by Impressionist Jim Ross.
Who's Lance Storm?
Exactly. Or, and I thought about this too, the last time Jeff tweeted her, it was like, hey, you should do the Super Podcast. One of our listeners, and I know he meant well, one of our listeners was like, yeah, Missy, you should do it. They talk about all the rumors about you. And he meant it, I think, in the way that we talk about, like, why it didn't work out with WWF or why they didn't do more with her after 1989. But when Missy Hyatt sees they're talking about all the rumors about you, she's obviously thinking something else.
Probably
there you go.
So, yeah.
It's one
of backtracking
those.
To Brian asking us if pro wrestling messed with our personal lives. I mean, does it begin and end for you guys with I'm not leaving the house until 8:05 on Saturdays?
Absolutely. You definitely would never
leave. Well, I had two wives tell me that I loved wrestling more than them, so I suppose it impacted it a little bit.
Were they right?
They speak the truth.
The first one was probably right. The second one wasn't. But the first one, yeah, she probably was.
I mean, I've told this story on the internet before, but I'll never forget. We got in September of 81, we got a notice from our cable company saying that WTBS would be on as of October 1st, 1981. And I remember telling my girlfriend this, okay, from now on, you know, our night started 8:05. And I might as well have told her, you know, yeah, I'm getting a sex change operation. She couldn't believe it.
Well, it's all about what was important back then.
How many of you have been in a relationship with a woman and she actually either attempted to or actually enjoyed professional wrestling at some point?
Me, but that was because they were all sleeping with the wrestlers.
Oh, my God, Tom.
Besides, you mean legitimate women? But go ahead.
What Jim brought up earlier when you asked him about the Marriott, and he goes, oh, we used to stay at the Red Roof Inn. I had to bite my tongue not to jump in and go, Red Roof Inn? J.W. Storm.
Yep.
I had one girlfriend that was a legitimate fan, and she used me like a shake and bake bag because I had wrestling tapes.
Wow, that's a real fan. She actually wanted to see the tapes.
Yeah. She would borrow my tapes. When we broke up, she kept like five of them.
Was she like into good stuff? I mean, was it just like show me world class so I could see Gino and the Von Erichs? Or was it like, do you have that Liger match? Can I borrow that?
She didn't go that far down the rabbit hole, but she was into the territories, and yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Because it started with her just liking WWF, and then I'm like, try this. And she goes, I read about this in the magazines.
Was that Teresa DeMarie?
Ouch.
Sorry to pop myself.
There's a name
an angel there for a second time.
Dangerously.
Good job, Tom. You killed the room.
I know. I did. Do you remember that name, Brian?
It's a name I've heard. Was she involved with? Did she do the like the UAWF stuff and everything?
No, you had mentioned that you had the readers page on, and she. I guess I'd add her as Roddy Piper's number one fan. She would always write letters to Dave, as would Charlie Hodgkisson and Ernie Santilli, maybe one or two others that I'm missing. But she was the only female name that could have been a wrestling fan that I could have inserted there. So I thought you would have all got the reference.
I remember she wrote a letter. I think she wrote two different letters about how great Piper was and how much Pauly Dangerously sucked. And by the time she was writing these, that was totally the opposite.
I'll bring up a name that Tom will remember, I'm sure. We were at a show in Miami where Pauly was working ringside. And when he came past us, I said, "Hey, Paul, there's a phone call from Angel in Philadelphia." And Paul turned to me and goes, "Hey, you're Meltzer's stooge."
Yeah, Angel's a young lady who I knew in the past. Apparently she was a lot younger than she revealed to me or everybody else until after the fact. But I have no
beef
with
her. We need to talk about statute of limitations at this point.
Yeah. Yes, court officer.
Not. Yeah, you are some kind of. Yeah, I shouldn't speak with you on record, Mr. Bowden. But yeah, she. I'll make it quick, but I actually.
That's what she said.
Yeah, true, and unfortunately, many of my partners have said that as well. But she was. Grossly over attractive and overdeveloped on one of the first one or two Memphis trips, and I think I was 16. And
this
she
is Angel
she
we're
was,
talking about.
Yeah, and
okay.
I think I was 16 or going on 17 or something, and her sister and her were there, and they told me she was 18, and I bought it hook, line, and sinker because. It made sense for Triple F Breasts to be 18 years old, and I kind of hung out, and it's a little famous name that's not so famous that came back along the 605 memories of mine here on this show. We started kind of dating, and then she disappeared one night, and I heard that she had hooked up with a wrestler called Dizzy Desmond. One of those guys Dennis brought in that like trained at Larry's place and you know, and then like years later she was with a friend of mine and I ended up having a child with him or whatever, and she was like, "You know, I'm only like 22 and I'm like, "What?" And
you did some quick math?
Yeah, I did some quick math considering I was like 26 at the time, and I'm like, nah.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know
impossible.
What? Pennsylvania is pretty backward. They probably have, what is the age of consent of like 9 or 10, I'm guessing?
I heard she hit Tully with that. When Tully worked for ECW at the beginning of 95, they tried to have him and Shane do something because Shane was on the whole anti-flare kick. And they figured, let's bring in a horseman. And it didn't work out because, I mean, first of all, they didn't do it right. They put him and Shane in like a 45-minute match. And, I mean, you know, Tully was never that guy. In my eyes, at least to me, Tully wasn't a, you know, 45-minute, 60-minute match kind of guy, especially in front of those fans at that time. And it didn't work out.
Do you remember
out.
What I called him, Brian?
JV Flair. Exactly. As several other people have started calling him that now. And whether it was that first night or the second time they brought him back, apparently what I had always heard back in the day was Angel, who was still doing stuff with ECW at that time, was celebrating her birthday backstage. And Tully's there. And Tully knew her from the hotels, from, you know, the NWA, from the WWF. And she, they're like, congratulations, Angel, 21. And Tully just like stops. And now he's, you know, he's religious and everything. And he's starting to add up in his head. Wait a minute. If she's 21 now, 95, how old was she in 88? And it just hit him like a brick from what I heard.
The first time I met Angel, the first thing that went through my – that I thought, I'm like, oh, my God, those are both bigger than my head.
True. Very true. And
she was what they call a Zoptic woman.
She – I mean, you guys saw her in that era. She looked no less than 21 at whatever age she was. And I was actually in love with her when I was 16, 17 years old. I was like a kid in a candy shop, and her whole family worked me. Like, I would go down and pick her up, like, on off wrestling nights to just go out on a date, and her parents and her brother, who was older, was acting like the younger brother and so forth. And,
you got worked by a whole family, huh?
I got worked by a whole family, and it's like, it's not like you're getting a millionaire. You're getting dorky TR, you know what I mean? It's like not even worth the work. But I really have no bad things, ill will to say. But I think somebody's – I think she's married or something now, and I think, you know, the guy's pissed that she went out with certain people in the business or whatever. But, I mean, to my – Dizzy Desmond, but to my knowledge, I mean, at least in my case, I had no fucking clue how old she was. Who would?
All right, you know. Let me make sure I'm understanding this. The family got together one night and said, "Look, we better make sure he fucks her." Well, we better come up.
I don't know about that.
Okay, you pretend you're the younger brother, even though you're 5 years older. And we'll pretend that she's 18, and let's take down all these pictures and everything. Like, it's a whole elaborate thing.
Well, it wasn't – I mean, I wasn't even consciously thinking. There might have been pictures, but the pictures I saw were all Angel, who looked like a woman, who was definitely built like a woman.
The judge would have loved you if this had ever gone to trial. I swear, well, Your Honor, she looked like a woman.
Here's what I love. You got her married to the new husband, okay? So the new husband goes, tell me who you slept with in the past. I want to know. Come clean on me. So she goes over, oh, this guy. Okay, well, he was a title holder. Okay. Hey, this guy. Okay, he was a regional.
All right, I'll give you a pass on that one, yeah.
Then there was Tom Robinson. Now, wait a minute.
No, he goes, who?
Now, he was before Dizzy Desmond, just so we clear things up.
Yeah, I think at this point my name's a little better known than Dizzy Desmond. I mean, I don't have that much of an ego.
You know what? I'm being totally serious when I say this. I heard about the story that, you know, they had the cake and it was her 21st birthday and that everyone kind of freaked out. I think that might have been Angel playing a rib. I don't believe that she was 15 back then. I don't.
She sure didn't look
it. I have no idea. I never saw her legal documentation, but that's what people are saying now.
So, yeah, technically, actually, she's probably 5 years older now than what she's claiming. Because, you know, women like to make themselves younger than they really are. So maybe that's her thing now, is saying, oh, no, when everyone thought I was 20, I was really 13. And I'm only 36 now.
36, she was about 40 triple F, actually.
Oh, and you know what? Let me throw this in. I remember in November 90, her telling me about one of her jobs, and she would need some kind of a documentation for that type of work.
Okay. I really don't know. Since she was brought up, I figured I'd tell my little history lesson. But I did want to like mention it because I heard the husband – whoever's with her now is like fired up about people that she went out with before. And I think I was even suggested that I introduced her to all these, we're not going to name names because it's all speculative, but you know, people like Jeff was alluding to in the joke, without naming names, like big stars. And, like, we just talked to Jimmy. Like, I was just a stooge who drove somebody from Atlantic Aviation. I wasn't the power broker of, wrestling romances, for Christ's sake. I mean, that's ludicrous. But anyway.
Hey guys, let me change the topic a little bit here. Observer, you guys were all friends with Dave. You were all frequent contributors to the Observer reader pages. And, of course, Jeff later had a column there. And people remember what you guys wrote in the yearbooks. Was there a least favorite letter writer to the readers pages, for all of you?
Yeah, me.
Yeah, I'm with Robinson, too. I can't think of anyone who stood out as, oh, my God, I don't want to read this guy.
I got one.
Okay.
Alex Marvez.
Okay.
Why?
I thought you were buddies with him.
No. We used to call him Alex the Mark down here. Because Alex, he's a writer for Sports Nation or something like that, some big internet. He's actually a former president of the Football Writers Association, I think. I mean, he's actually done really well for himself. But at the time, he was like a 19-year-old kid, and he had this small column, I think, in the Herald, Miami Herald. And he just walked around like he was the shit. And he would wear his hair in a ponytail, and he had this little goat, and he was like 19 years old, and it looked just completely ridiculous. And he made a big point of all the shows of having us watch him go to the back of the dressing room, and he like waved to us like, here I am going back in the back, guys, So, but God bless him. He's done real well for himself. President of the Football Writers Association.
No, he has done well for himself. I have one, and it's someone that Brian is friendly with, and not being disrespectful, this guy and I just for whatever reason never hit it off. Donnie Liable.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand Donnie. There were people who I could see why they wouldn't hit it off with Donnie, and I do remember his letters too. They were never really positive, I guess is the way I'd put it.
Good way of looking at it.
Yeah, but I can understand that. Knowing you and knowing Donnie, and I haven't really known Donnie. I talked to him, twice in the last 15 years or 17 years now that I think about it. But I could see why your personalities wouldn't mesh too well.
He was cool in person. Were you in person with him, John?
A couple of times.
Yeah, he seemed okay in person. I'm starting to get vague memories. His letters were a little bit abrasive. But,
and I think there were a lot of them were politically motivated. Like if he was friends with someone in the business, he would push them hard in his letters.
Yes. With all due respect to Donnie, because I don't have a problem with him, that's certainly something I have thought in the past reading his things. The only one he did write that was the opposite was when he went after Mike Lano after Eddie Gilbert died. And Dave printed it because at that point, Dave and Lano weren't getting along. And I think Dave was just happy he could put this anti-Lano thing in his newsletter that he didn't write. And Donnie wrote a letter about how despicable he thought it was that Lano sent, I guess, everyone on his mailing list, like the copy of the Christmas card that Eddie had sent him. And he told some story. He wrote it where, Doug was told while he was in the ring that Eddie died, and it wasn't true, that he kind of just made up the quotes. And he just wrote this whole piece about how despicable Lana was. And then, like, not too long after that, I was around both of them at one of Dennis's Eddie Gilbert memorial things. And, if Donnie was pissed at Lana, Lana didn't care. He was still just being Mike Lano, a nice guy to him. So, that's one of the great things about Lano. Lano kind of no-sells any heat to your face.
Yeah, he's just oblivious, man. I said before, I never had trouble with Dr. Mike. So, but all the stories, and you reminded me of when he stayed at Dennis's house and ate him out of house and home and was vacuuming his floor at 4 in the morning and stuff like that. So he has to come on the show, man. I want to join the masses that are reaching out to say, Doc, you got to come on and talk.
As of now, it's not going to happen. I've heard back from him again. I tried to call him again a second time. Apparently he didn't pick up the first time because he wasn't home. The second time, I don't know. I don't want to hound the guy, but I mean, we've had very pleasant email exchanges.
He just do somebody's podcast?
Well, there's a podcast people were posting, but I think it's from a few years ago. Bruce Hart's podcast.
That's old. I didn't even listen to it because
he did Glenn Broggett's podcast. Glenn's a friend of the show. Glenn, has done a lot of cool things behind the scenes to help the show. maybe over the summer or something. It's Glenn and George Shire. They have a show, and they got Mike Lano on there. But, you know, this is the place Mike should come on and talk. Because it's not just all going to be, hey, talk about the Snickers bar, talk about the funeral. Yeah, I am interested in hearing what he has to say about, you know, the Los Angeles territory, what he experienced as a young fan there and everything. But hopefully he changes his mind. I have nothing against Mike. I'm trying to explain to him that I'm not going to have Bob Barnett on the line ambushing him. That seems to be the big issue, is that he really thinks I'm going to have Barnett. Because, I mean, the way he phrased it without giving away the email was, you know, that he's not, it was like, I'm not necessarily saying you'll do it, but that it could possibly happen without your knowledge. It's like, what? I control who's on the show. I mean, it's not going to be all of a sudden Barnett just buzzes into the show without my knowledge and attacks someone. So I'm still working on it. I'm still trying. And I'm hopeful. I got my fingers crossed. I got my toes crossed. I would love to have Dr. Mike Lano on the show.
Yeah, and he doesn't know what he's missing. Go ahead.
Your audience is hopeful, too.
I've made him a star.
That's what I'm saying. He could make money.
He could make a lot of money. Oh, my God. He could sell toothpaste. He could sell toothbrushes. he could sell T-shirts. I mean, he literally could make money off what I've done for him. He just has to kind of be able to embrace it a little bit and laugh at it. And then, you know, just talk. Just, I mean, that's the thing, you know, I try to explain to him in the email. It's like he's like, well, you say all these stories that aren't true. Why not have me, you know, why not talk to me about it? That's what I want to do. You know, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, is have you give your side of the story. And it's what I've said.
Yeah, you know what he is? You know what he is, Brian? He's the Bruno of wrestling fans. He doesn't want to admit that everything he's done is a work.
That could be true. That could be true. I love hearing a Bruno Sammartino shoot, whether it's on Meltzer's show, or I know Cornette shot a couple things with him, where he just pushes it to the limit, but he won't still say it's a work, or that anything was planned out, or that, you know, he knew he was going to lose or anything. He finds a careful way to not say certain things, but he's more open now than he's ever been.
You know what? I respect that, though, because that's the world these guys grew up in, and then the rules were very strict. You did not speak about that. I mean, in 1985, how ridiculous, you know, it's obvious by then what pro wrestling is, but Eddie Mansfield had people threatening to kill him.
Yeah, he did.
And that was just the code, man.
Red turns to green.
Yeah.
I remember I said that to you at a traffic light.
That's all I took from that 2020 of my shitty memory. Red turns to green.
You know, Len Rossi, when he was on the show, was the same thing. And, you know, he's in his late 80s at this point, and he's not comfortable on air saying anything that exposes the business. So there's a line. You have to figure out a way to work around the line and, you know, make it so you could draw something out of him to make it an interesting segment. But you also have to acknowledge, you know, respectfully, this is his wishes, and I'm going to honor that. He deserves that. But I got to try to find a way to carefully weave through this to make the story come out. And
you know what someone told me once, Brian? Someone told me once that a lot of the mindset for some of these guys, not necessarily someone who's as old as Bruno or Len Rossi, but for the guys that are a little bit younger than that, they always figure that they're a phone call away from getting back in the business. I remember I did an interview with Bob Roop years ago.
I remember that one.
At that point, Bob was working for like Global Wrestling Federation, was just about out of the business. And I did a pretty candid interview with him. But there was some stuff that he just didn't want to talk about. And the mindset that people told me was that, oh, he thinks he's a phone call away and he's going to get back into the business somehow. And the funny thing was like a year later, Ole brought him in when he came in and made him a road agent.
I forgot about that.
You know what I like about that, with especially with your dinner deal, Jeff, is the a guy who seemingly doesn't care, from what I've seen in shoots, is a guy you got to do a little video calling us a bunch of cocksuckers, Ken Patera. He seems pretty candid.
Yeah, he there was only one thing that Ken didn't want to talk about, and you can figure it out yourself.
His sure. First one versus Bruno?
His hair?
Yeah.
Brent Musburger's commentary on World's Strongest Man?
It involved a late-night eatery.
Ribbit?
Now, he didn't want to have any conversations about McDonald's. He was pretty clear about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who did he tell he was going to choke out? Was that Feinstein or Gabe?
It was Gabe Sapolsky. He called a cocksucker and said he was going to kick the shit out of him. You know what would have been funny is in the middle of that dinner, McAdam called you on your cell phone and you said, "Hey, Johnny Mac, what did you say? Mac? Big Mac?" well, guys, one more person I'm going to add to this call. I'm going to add him right here. A special guest who just let me know that he is available. So let me add people.
Let's pretend we're in a heated argument.
Okay.
This guy comes on.
Okay, and I believe he's been added. Let's see what happens here. Hello, guest, are you there?
Woo! You have reached the Boogeyman's answering machine. I'm not here right now. I'm somewhere on the road to WrestleMania. That means I'm somewhere between Orlando and Charlottesville, Virginia. So if you see me out there on the road, I got my thumb out. Just ease that ride over and give the Boogeyman a lift, would ya? Woo, Merced!
It's the handsome Boogeyman is on the line.
That's right, brother.
Well, handsome Boogie lightened the mood a little bit because I'm still pissed about when I went to Fort Lauderdale with you, Jeff, and, well, Miami to be exact, and, you're supposed to pick me up, and it didn't work out. And I heard McAdam had a hand in that too. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
I have no knowledge of that.
Yeah.
Who we got on the horn here?
That was all your fault. That was all your fault.
Boogeyman, we
whatever,
have,
dude.
Boogeyman, we have Tom Robinson, John McAdam, and Jeff Baldwin on the line.
Jeff Baldwin, that man owes me a dinner.
That's right. Boogie, isn't it your birthday today?
Absolutely, absolutely. Ask me anything.
What's this, Reddit?
Boogeyman, do you have anything you want to say to Tom Robinson?
Oh, Tom Robinson. Tom Robinson's a good man. A good man. I like that. I like that TMZ neck.
Obviously, Boogie's mutual.
You know, I just the other day I
you like him too. Oh, that's excellent. Wonderful.
The other day I decided to take the dive and I bought the Jimmy Valiant autobiography, and on his website it was listed as $35 plus $10 shipping. I know a little bit about shipping. There's no reason that book should be $10 shipping. So I went to Amazon and I saw for $35, which seems to be the going rate, plus $3.95 shipping. So I took that option. By the way, the seller was Angel Valiant. So it's coming from the same place. Ah. But on Amazon, you save $6 in shipping. And I get the book, and it's huge. I mean, I got to give him credit for $35. You know, there are very few books I've paid that much for. I know Gary Hart's book was expensive when it came out. And the Valiant book is huge. So it's going to take me a while to get through it. But in there was like a piece of photocopied paper, he's selling his house. It was like a listing to buy his house that he sent me with the book. It's on sale now. It's his house.
Wow. Now, does Angel think you're worthy of buying that house?
She may, but Big Mama may not.
I was in the Memphis Mid-South Coliseum in 1988, and I'm in the corridor. And Jimmy Valiant's at his merchandising table, and he's staring a hole through me. And I'm like, okay, this is uncomfortable. And then he kind of waves me over, and I'm like, oh, no. He goes, brother, what's your name? I'm like, I'm John McAdam. How you doing? He's like, would you like to buy my record? I'll sign it for you. So, sure, you know, give him $3, and I had to sign Jimmy Valiant 45, and I got away from him without being molested, so it all worked out.
Yeah. I ran into him at a couple of different things at Cauliflower Alley, and you're right. He's very personable, but also very determined. It's tough to get by his table without getting a sales pitch. At Cauliflower Alley, he stands right up just like a real gentleman, sticks out his hand, and you can't just, you know. But he didn't have a record. I would have bought a record from him in a second. He just
now, John, did he try to kiss you like Tony Schiavone?
Unfortunately, no.
It's Jimmy Valiant, Virgil, and Diamond Dallas Page, like the three guys that you can't shake their hand without them trying to sell you everything, including in this case, his house. Jimmy Valiant's
house.
Hold on, you know what? You guys talk. I'm going to go get the listing. I'll be right back.
Talk about a different world. Have you guys all seen the footage where Jerry Lawler keeps calling Jimmy Valiant a faggot on TV?
Yes. And he's the baby.
Things you would not hear these days.
Well, he paints outside of my neighborhood. Go ahead.
No, I mean, he would talk about how he would paint his fingernails silver and go hitchhiking, and Lawler called him that word.
Right.
Yeah. Like I said, and then he would abbreviate it with fag and faggot.
Lawler do that with Adrian Street when Adrian Street was in Memphis?
I don't remember it, but it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
Somebody there, one of you guys will know. I remember seeing a Memphis show where the crowd was chanting, "You got AIDS."
Somebody
was doing a live interview.
I've been to live shows where they've chanted that.
Okay, I'm back.
Yo, you missed a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, you really.
So it's about fucking time, Brian.
This book, Woo Mercy Daddy, is 572 pages. And he also lists everyone who graduated from the Boogeyman's wrestling camp. And, of course, in the class of 2006 is Bruce Pobanz. And there's a star next to his name, and it says honorary graduate. So I don't know what makes someone an honorary graduate at Boogie's wrestling camp. Maybe an extra few bucks. But he sent me three.
It's the course by mail.
Yeah, it's the correspondence course. Like Johnny Valentine like used to have.
Like the University of Phoenix kind of training.
So there were three photocopied pieces of paper with the book. One is WWE Hall of Famer Handsome Jimmy, the Boogie Woogie Man Valiant t-shirts, and there's four different t-shirts and a website link to get them, and they come in various sizes. And then there's an ad for Boogie's Wrestling Camp. Every Sunday from 12 noon to 4 p.m., tour the Wrestling Hall of Fame Museum and watch students training and meet Jimmy and Angel Valiant. And then there's a map here of how to get there. And then the last page is...
a map?
Gorgeous country home of WWE Hall of Famer Handsome Jimmy, the Boogie Woogie Man Valiant, for sale by owner, shown by appointment only. And the sheet I have, it says $199,000, and with pen, it's crossed out. And the person who sent it to me wrote in $175,000. So it was marked down just to send this to me. And it has a full listing of everything in here. And there's Coca-Cola chandelier lighting, whatever that means.
And all right, where is this?
This is...
Where is this house?
Shawsville, Virginia.
Shawsville, Virginia, daddy.
How many square feet do you think 175 grand would get you wherever that is?
Does it say? It was built in 1922. How many square feet? It's next door to Boogie's Wrestling Camp Hall of Fame Museum, but it's not included in the sale.
I want to say, Brian, he's offering you a real savings there. That's like a 12% savings.
So 2,300 square feet of living space on a 1-plus-acre lot.
Just buy it and add it to your collectibles.
What do you have? I have Gorgeous George's bobby pins. What do you have? I have Kerry Von Erich's robe that he wore when he won the NWA title. What do you have? I got Jimmy Valiant's house.
That's where you can have the convention.
Yeah, it's located right next door to Boogie's Wrestling Camp. That'll be a little weird. You buy the house from him and he's next door every day training the Bruce Pobanzes of the world.
Right on. Speaking of which...
this may be the best way for me to meet Pobanz, though. Is if I buy the house next door to the one Hall of Fame we know he's in.
Brian, can I just ask you real quick? Brian, how do you spell Pobanz?
P-L-Z-D-C-K-L-R.
Okay, thanks.
Right.
There's another R at the end.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I thought
there
was a K.
I didn't mean to spell his name wrong again. I didn't mean to do it again.
Did, convention talk, before I forget, is there any movement on that, Mr. TGBL?
No, and that's all just due to me just being swamped, and I haven't been able to do it. I need to, you know, talk to a few places, see about a group rate. The consensus seemed to be, when I surveyed people on the page, that they did not want it to be a part of SummerSlam or any other weekend. They kind of wanted it to be an isolated event, which is flattering. I mean, that people, I thought I have to do it in conjunction with something where people would be coming from out of town for it. And people, everyone who responded was pretty much the opposite, which was just do this as an isolated event so we could just focus on this and the show and, you know, have fun with each other, which is really neat. And I think that could be a lot of fun, but no movement yet.
I don't want to have to turn in my Evolve tickets for that weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, Brian, just a quick suggestion. If you tie it in with an indie show, I mean, they will probably like work with you, and you know, because they're always desperate to sell tickets, and they'll do something for you.
Well, my thought is, and I don't want to give away too much, if I do it with an indie show, and if it doesn't happen this year, it'll certainly happen next year, but I'd like it to happen this year. I would want a 605 themed indie show for the people who come to the convention, because I think based on the response I've received, we would have enough to get a really nice indie show crowd. So to me, bringing people to an indie show, which is just going to be a bunch of modern wrestlers, is one thing, but bring them to a show where potentially TR Shock and a few other people related to the show, we could do some show like angles. That would really make things special. Derek Dukes, Dizzy Desmond. That would make the show special. We could have
a step ahead of me, Brian.
You could have Tom could do Polaroid pictures under the bleachers. I mean, I think the listeners would really eat that up.
Well, that may be the way to finally get your hands on Poe Bands or Mike Lano. Get them booked at that thing.
I think one of the things you would have to do in conjunction with any sort of convention is it has to be an accessible strip joint nearby.
Well, that's a given. That's a given. I'm in the Northeast. That's pretty easy to do. Where is it not easy to do? I mean, if I'm in Florida, it's easy to throw, you know, I can throw a baseball and it'll run into a strip club. If I'm in Tennessee, the mouse is here. I mean, where can you, strip clubs are so easy to find nowadays.
Can I give you guys a quick non-wrestling story?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm in Montreal for the first time ever. I just turned 16 years old, and I'm with my friend, and we're on the street, St. Catherine Street, for like 5 minutes, and this guy motions to us. He goes, "Gentlemen, most beautiful girls in Montreal, come in." So you want to talk about a 16-year-old's paradise, man.
Huh. The wildest weekend of my life was in Montreal. Just off the hook. I'm not going to give away the story now. I'm going to save this for something in the future, but the story included at various times buying drugs in the strip club, being in the strip club, obviously, nonstop, a fight between my cousin and a pimp in the hotel, my cousin jumping from one balcony to another balcony. I mean, it was complete insanity, and it was all Montreal. And then we all got loaded and got on the train and went back home. It was wonderful.
Nice.
That's what we'd like to hear.
Rue de Saint Laurent and Rue de John F. Kennedy. I got my weed on Rue de John F. Kennedy. So here's the JFK. It was a jazz fest. That's the one thing I remember too, because we ended up meeting some people and going off with them, and they had brass knuckles, and they were shocked at how cavalier we were about the brass knuckles, because I guess up there, if they find you with any kind of weapon like that, you're gone. You're done. And we were more afraid of like smoking weed, you know, out in the open. They were like, "Oh no, up here, that'll be fine." So it was just like a twisted logic at that time. New York's a little different now, but the fact that they thought weed was the thing that you can get away with, and we thought brass knuckles were like nothing. And you know, it was kind of like a reverse thing. But I missed Bobby McFerrin, and I really wanted to see Bobby McFerrin live just to see how he was going to do all the like how he was going to do all that live. And we missed Bobby McFerrin at jazz.
Sound like Miss Spencer there.
that was actually where she got it from. She was a big fan of Bobby McFerrin.
You motherfucker, motherfucker.
So one day.
You got to sell that shirt at the convention.
I'm trying to think of ideas for different merchandise, and I got to do something with Mrs. Spencer. I'm definitely doing something for Is That For True, because it has now become a part of my daily life. Like, I say it now to people, they have no idea what I'm saying, and I've heard from a lot of other people, same thing. Is That For True? They just say it nonstop. So I got to do something with that as well.
I like Buddha. I'm sorry that happened.
I'm sorry that happened. Is That For True?
And then maybe I got to do like a TR Knack shirt or something.
Do you still have Mrs. Spencer's number?
I never had the.
No, not that I'm asking you to give it out, but you should give it a try just to see what happens. What's there to lose?
I wish.
Cornette will answer.
Yeah, Cornette will answer. Wouldn't that be the funniest thing?
Could you sell a T-shirt with the Lando watermark on it?
You know, that's a very interesting legal argument there. What I could do with that or not. So I know, like, I'd hate to go back to Lando, but I know, you know, he means well in many cases, but one of the things that he loses me on is I know for a fact that he has sent other people's photos around with his watermark on it. And that's messed up. I mean, not just like posted them on articles on the internet. He sent it to like publishing companies, like websites, and represented it as being his. And I don't know if it's just, you know, I actually picture him having a room with just pictures from like the floor to the ceiling, just like a giant pile. And he just pulls pictures out and finds things and says, oh, I must have taken this, not realizing, oh, it was Pete Lederberg who took this picture. So that's the one thing he loses me with completely, is the whole taking credit for other people's photos.
Question for Scott. Scott, you're still there, right, buddy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you going to the CAC this year?
No, not going to the CAC this year.
Our mutual friend Greg Greenland was thinking about it and inboxed me the other night. I don't know if I'm in the financial shape to do so, because I've never been. But obviously with some recent episodes, it would be classic to have, if not me, somebody getting a picture with Mr. Gurria endorsing 605 without even knowing what he was endorsing.
Yeah.
Don King hair, that killed me.
Every insult you had about Tony Gurria was incredible, because your insults were pointing out actual traits.
Tattoo on the forearm.
Yeah, stupid red, you know, stupid red brim around your tights. Just.
And I think it's opposite. I think it's blue and red. But blue and red. Once I start going.
Forearm tattoo. You did nothing but point out who he actually is, and then of course you did it again this week when you killed Terry Taylor on the show.
Yeah, but like with Gurria, I mean, he's a backstage prick, but in all reality, they're characters that we do. Some people take them too seriously, and I was rubbed the wrong way. But, you know, I wasn't exactly, you know, working the main event on Raw, and he was there to do a job. I'm not backpedaling the character, but as Tom, I will say the guy was maybe a prick in doing it, but that was his gig, to get people out of there that weren't supposed to be there.
No, but I feel that when you heard Kenny Bolin say a similar story on the show, that was kind of when you had the light bulb go off in your head, like, okay, now I'm going to talk about this because it's not just me. He did this to Kenny.
And then the third one was Greg Greenland, who was trying to be a ref at one point and was booked as an EMT, and that he was shown on Raw being an EMT and still got attempted to be kicked out. So, like, Gurria was a little bit overboard with that.
Scott and I will remember this. When Tony Gurria was like the heartthrob babyface of the WWF.
Maybe Scott won't remember that. Scott, are you there?
I'm absolutely here. I didn't hear the first part that where my name was mentioned. Usually when my name is mentioned, I sit straight up at attention. But I didn't hear that part. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I do remember that. Yeah, the one thing that Tom doesn't capture is just how dull Tony Gurria is. there were just those people. Now, actually, backstage, I'm sure that he has to be the bad cop, and maybe he just is miserable. But didn't Strongbow have that same reputation? And he was backstage for years.
Yes, he did.
With the wrestlers, he had that reputation.
Yeah, the wrestlers.
Yeah, I think Strongbow's reputation was worse.
Really?
It was.
Thank you. But, yeah, so maybe that works for some people. Like, there are people like, well, he's like an errand guy these days. But Downtown Bruno, you can't find anybody around there to say a bad word about him. They all love that guy.
It's amazing how long Rene Goulet got away with being an agent with that hair.
Well, speaking, I mean, Michael Hayes, how old was Michael Hayes?
36.
36,
yeah. Well, that's the hairdo. I saw
I still watch, as you guys know. And he was breaking up Shane and AJ the other night with, you know.
Oh, boy.
Hair a la 1987.
And he's 57, and he had that hair and that suit.
Yeah.
The suits. I mean, exactly. That's the thing. The hair, I understand, even though he's bald on top now. I understand that somewhat. I don't understand the facial hair, like the way he shaves it. But then the wardrobe sense. I mean, when in the history of the Freebirds or Michael Hayes did you ever think he was going to end up dressed like that? Regularly. Yeah. Like, you know, for fun.
For what? Like in the NBA.
Is he wearing the suits that he wore in that Freebird Road video?
Oh, my God. That video. Where he went to Terry Gordy's grave?
Yeah, I just watched that the other night.
The best thing in wrestling history is him and
Garvin. It was show prep. It was show prep, Brian.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. The best thing in wrestling history is him and Garvin, when they got inducted last year, running out on the stage, and it was Hayes' idea. Like, hey, we got to go out there and rock like we used to. And it's just middle-aged Jimmy Garvin just losing his breath and blowing up, running all over the stage, doing all the stuff he used to do. He's so much cooler now doing it than when he had the long curly hair and everything.
Yeah, he blew up, man. He looked like he was playing at Mile High Stadium.
Well, I popped when they did the thing where they pointed at each other. That was my
that favorite move. That was the thing when I was a kid and I had a sleepover at a friend's house. We stayed up. It seemed like it was late. It was like 10 p.m. on Channel 11 in New York or something. And we're watching WCW and the Freebirds come out. And they're doing that. Like, you know, they're pointing. Hayes is like on the top turnbuckle pointing down at Garvin. Yep. And my friend just goes, they're gay. Like it came to him. He realized it in that moment. The pointing. Apparently pointing was a gay trait. In 1989, that I didn't know about.
I seen him come out of the room with Precious, and if being with her is gay, I don't want to be straight.
Most underrated, beautiful woman in wrestling history, Precious, in my eyes.
Oh my goodness, I don't want to.
You know what? I can't
think
of anyone I would put on top of her as underrated and beautiful.
Because you never
put me on top of her.
You never hear anyone say. You never hear anyone say, "Oh, you know, Precious was fine." You know, you never hear that at all. But she was. I mean, everyone talks about Missy or Elizabeth, but in the 80s, Precious may be at the top of that list.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go that far. I would say she's underrated, though, because everyone talks about how hot Missy and Elizabeth were.
Yeah.
And she gets
excluded.
Hated
the angle with her and Flair, though.
I'm sorry, you hated it?
The angle with her and Flair?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just made Flair look kind of pathetic, you know, that he's just
it made the whole promotion look pathetic, man.
Well, the promotion had started getting pathetic by that point, you know.
I mean, JJ getting pushed in the pool, okay, that was great, but the rest of it.
But JJ getting pushed in the pool isn't even the worst thing. Didn't JJ want to hide in the closet to watch?
Yes,
that's right.
Fucking R. Kelly, J.J. Dillon.
Hey, I'd rather hide in the closet and watch and get pushed in the pool in a suit. Come on.
Yeah. I guess so. Man, NWA, just late 87 into 88 is a disaster. For every good thing we could talk about, the Midnights, the Fantastics, the Varsity Club emerging, Wyndham, there is the worst stuff, and it's the worst of Dusty Rhodes at that point.
I think I'm not skipping the Dusty Rhodes, but you know my brain, Bri. I just thought back. I think it was last week with Jeff. You were talking about Ronnie Garvin's run, right?
Yes.
I believe so, yeah.
No lie, shortly after they had a house show in Philly, and I stopped because I was starving on Island Avenue at the Wendy's. And, you know, Ric Flair with his gimmick of jet flying, limousine riding, blah, 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 blah. The guy he dropped the title to is with Joey Mag sitting there eating a fucking Dave's hamburger and an order of fries and a Coke. he was literally the belt carrying NWA world champion at Denny's with the late Joey Mags or Wendy's rather. I'm sorry. Wendy's on Island.
He's living the lifestyle.
You know, let me tell you guys my least favorite wrestling cliche, and it's related to this. You've got Ronnie Garvin as NWA champion, and on the other channel, you've got Hulk Hogan as your competition's champion. Does the light ever go on for Crockett or Dusty that that's not a very good comp. But wait, here comes the cliche. Our fans don't watch that wrestling. Bullshit. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get hot over that one. How could promoters be so dumb? It's on TV. It's free. It's the same thing, but they're not going to watch it.
Well, goddammit, let's put our money together and get a new promotion.
Well, we have a booker on the line.
Yes,
it was the same thing where you'd have Hogan winning his matches in 5 minutes, and then they'd see Flair working 45 minutes and losing to guys that were, you know, nowhere near as talented as him.
With no offense.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I don't think Flair in like a 4-year period ever won by a clean pinfall on any big show.
Or he'd go on TV against Mike Jackson and get in 25% of the offense.
Oh, yeah. George South. You know, same thing. Yeah.
Well, I know on a double shot of his Broadways when they would do two a day, he would look at the guy and say, "You got 2 hours, let's go."
Yeah.
Jeff, did you get that one? Sorry.
I got that one.
Sorry, buddy. I had a bad Flair experience last year too, so
that was funny though.
Probably over a year ago.
One of the great moments in show history, Tom.
Yeah. I almost had a fist fight with Ric Flair. Now that I think back, he might have kicked my ass because, I don't know, I lost a little bit. Lost a little off my fastball, as they say.
I'm 37 right now, so I'm a little younger than everyone here. But I've had that point recently where, you know, the anniversary of someone's death comes up, whether it's Eddie Gilbert or Kerry Von Erich or really anyone at this point. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe now I'm older than they were when they died. Like, it kind of blew
we all did
mind.
That.
Yeah, like when did it really hit any of you guys, just the age that, oh my God, I'm older than this person when they died?
George Steele.
Not exactly the same thing. For me, it might have been Mike Von Erich because I'm like, oh my God, he's 2 years older than me and he's dead.
Yeah.
Any of the
mine might have been Eddie because Eddie and I were the same age.
Mine was not wrestling related. It was when you used to look in Playboy and they had the information on the centerfold and they would list her birth date, and I'd see the birth date and I'd go, "Oh, that's the year I graduated from high school." Old. That's old.
Old.
I was stuck on the turn-ons and turn-offs. I didn't look at the year.
Do you want to hear a horrible Playboy story? When I was 13 years old, I read an article on how to break up with girls. I was 13 reading the articles.
Hey. That's why you're so astute.
I think it's interesting that Tom said he didn't look at the age. Well, apparently, going back to the story with Angel, he didn't look at the year.
What are your interests? What are your turn-ons and turn-offs?
I like Tully Blanchard. And ping pong.
Well, let's go play some table tennis, baby.
Ping pong ball.
Favorite places. Under the bleachers. With Ox
now,
Baker.
For the, I hate to be the party pooper, but that was just a Dennis line breaking my balls.
Of course.
Nobody was ever under the bleachers, to my knowledge, with Ox Baker, but I came back in a huff, like, I believe it was Angel. It might have been one of my other girlfriends that I just kind of had around that time. But I was like, he didn't miss a beat, and he didn't know what I was going to ask him. I just hurried back from probably – he probably said, "Hey, man, take Laura to the airport. He's got to get out of here." He always had me do these little stooge jobs. And I got back, and I was like, "Hey, man, let's just say Jane so it's not an Angel story. Hey, man, where's Jane?" He's like, "I don't know. Last time I saw her, she was blowing Ox Baker under the bleachers." And turned around and continued a conversation with somebody else.
Do you think Ox Baker had a rat, like, ever?
I guarantee you
did. At some point, yeah. I mean, Andre's got a kid. Worked. Yeah, you could get them.
Hey,
where's the blowjobs?
Do you know who I heard was like an incredible ladies' man? And I'm saying this for real. Killer Karl Krupp.
Wow.
I know that sounds like something I made up. Cornette told me this.
Wow. Killer Karl Krupp. I can't even say this without laughing.
You would think Killer Karl Cox would be a cocksmith. And it was It was Krupp the whole time. I call him Krupp. You call him Krupp, whatever.
Well, he's a heel, and the Krupp is a sickness, so I think that makes sense.
I wonder if this is this getting over, or is this boring?
I think this is a mix of both things. But before we go, I'm going to add one person to the end of this call, just because I left him out of the last one, and I'm going to apologize right now to Bobby Blaze, just because I wanted to call Bobby, but we are running late with time, so I don't think I'm going to be able to get Bobby on here today. But let's see if I can get this person to pick up the phone. I don't know if he's around. It's going to be trying it, but I'd like to get.
And I do feel Brian's audience will find this scintillating. That's the word I'm using.
At least the first part of the show. Yeah. Hold on.
Would Oxbaker be known for his mustache rides?
Oh. If the price is right, yeah. I once saw Oxbaker walking his wiener dog in a parking lot in New Jersey. That's a conversation.
Is that a double entendre?
Sadly, no. I'm known for my single entendre.
All has been forwarded to an automatic voice message
system.
Let's
leave a message
502.
Oh, that's his phone number. I'm about to bleep that.
Is not available. Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Travis, it's the great Brian Last, along with a cast of characters that will put you to sleep in about 2 minutes. Anyone want to say hello to Travis?
No.
Travis, how the fuck are you?
Travis, may John Calipari come down with the clap.
I think everyone touched base there. Travis, hope all is well. Hopefully you'll be on the next Holiday Star Wars. Talk to you later. I'm hanging up. I'll bleep out your number. All right, I hung up on him.
Travis is a big Kentucky fan, for those who didn't get the reference.
Oh, and he's gone. All right, I think everyone else is still here, but we should probably start wrapping it up pretty soon.
Brian told me when I first came on, he said, you could come or go whenever you want. I missed the last one. The first one I kind of left early.
Yeah.
And this one I should have left early. I just keep staying on the phone.
Yeah. Actually,
am I free to talk about the last time we did one of these calls and you weren't on the early part of the show?
Sure.
One of my favorite.
I'm saying sure like I'm Brian. Sorry.
Just one of my favorite precious memories. He was going to start this group phone call, I think the New Year's one, with you, and you weren't able to be there. I don't know if you came on later or just weren't on the episode. So he calls me moments before the thing is supposed to start. Can you go first? Can you be on the phone first? Oh, sure. Glad to do it. You know. So he puts me on the phone and then almost instantly throws Kenny Bolin on the phone with me and I think John.
Hmm.
And Kenny, from his hospital bed, is so damn funny, and he's just off to the races, and it's hard to even get a word in, you know? But here he calls me moments before the show. Please, please, please go on first. Tom can't make it. Sure, glad to do it. The instant I'm on there with Kenny, I'm laughing, I'm reacting to something he says, and I'm getting these messages. You're killing me. Please be quiet. Don't react, don't laugh, don't say anything.
That's not exactly how it happened.
And then, so I do that. And then when Kenny finally hangs up the phone, I start getting my balls broken because I didn't get a word in edgewise. Geez, Scott, you had nothing to say to Kenny Bolin.
That's not exactly how it happened at all.
Behind the scenes of the dictator.
I was getting a lot of noise from Scott's end. So I said to Scott,
as usual,
just mute yourself when you're not talking or reacting to something, just because I'm getting noise from your end. I could tell it's coming from you.
You're killing me, he writes.
And then he didn't do it. So then I wrote, you're killing me. Do it. Mute yourself when you're not talking or, you know, reacting to something. You're killing me.
Please don't react. Don't laugh.
All right. You know what? I accidentally hung up on McAdam before. I think I got him back on the line. John, you're there?
Yes, I am. Brian Lasto, I am a gasto that you hung up on me.
He's about to accidentally hang up on me.
God, I was laughing for a half an hour over that one.
I was listening. I was listening, and I love Kenny, but about 15, 20 minutes into the soliloquy of his, it got a little painful. Kenny got a lot in that night. A lot of offense, and it was a squash match for a while.
I expected to have him on for a couple minutes. He was in the hospital. I'm thinking he's in the hospital. He told me I have to call by a certain time because they won't let him take any phone calls after that point. So that's why I got him in when I did. And then he just didn't get off the phone. And then I tried a few times and he still wouldn't get off the phone. I didn't want to just hang up on the guy. And eventually he got off the phone. I just heard from Travis. He actually is there. So now let's really quick try him and then we can have a grand exit for everybody here. Let me add this number. Add.
Kenny was the guest that wouldn't leave.
The hospital or the show?
Both.
The show.
Travis.
Hello.
Travis.
Hey, Brian.
Say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
What's up, John McAdam? How you doing?
Old T-Hack.
Who's online? I know Tom is.
Scott Cornish.
It's your favorite.
Travis, good to hear from you.
It's hey, your favorite Scott. Booker.
John McAdam, your favorite Tennessee Volunteers fan?
Hey, I just want to let Tom know it's Rick Pitino has a clap, not John Calipari.
Oh, he heard that message.
I knew you were a Kentucky guy, and I had to have Calipari have the fictitious disease. Of course, he's fine. Of course, he's fine.
Oh, Lord.
Well, Travis,
how have y'all been on the line tonight?
It's been a pretty wild show so far, and a dull show at times. All blamed on Tom Robinson. And I figured before we left, I wanted to get you on the line just because you weren't on the last one and the show was running late and there are now, what, 5 people on the line? But I wanted to make sure, you know, you're a big contributor to the show. I wanted you to be a part of this as well.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Actually, one more person did have something to say to you.
You motherfucker.
I think it was that lady sitting next to, in front of me at the Louisville Gardens.
It could have been. So, everyone, one by one, what is your favorite Travis Heckle artwork? Let's start with Tom. Let's go in the order of when you came on the show, so everyone just doesn't start talking over each other. Tom, favorite can't speak. Favorite Travis Heckle artwork.
It's not just, you know, kissing ass, but everyone's excellent. It's hard to choose, but personally, because you know, I do. Like myself, I have a little self-esteem, so I really enjoyed when he did kind of the whole crew, and I had the little grown-up TR bald head and beard, but I looked like a little baby laying on the ground, and Cornish was in there, and just the whole TGBL was in there, everybody was in there, so he kind of made an ensemble of us, of the 605 wacky crew that we are. I think that captured, I mean, that was kind of like a benchmark artwork, if you will. And
that was New Year's.
I dig that.
Yeah.
That was New Year's. Who's next? Baldrin the Booker.
I think I would have to say Mike Lano as Prince.
And John McAdam.
Without question, I used this for the cover of my Facebook page for a while. Tom Robinson arguing with Ric Flair.
Another good one, yeah. Scotty, what do you think?
Well, both of them were mentioned. I love the group photo. The recent Lano as Prince one killed me. Personally, one that I even used as my own profile picture was the one he did of me and the Jim Ross ventriloquist dummy. But another one that still cracks me up is the one depicting the story of Dennis Coraluzzo and Kenny Bolin running away from the dining and dashing and running away from the waiters.
That was a good one.
Dennis and chef's hat. There you go.
Yeah, that is a good one. Travis, what is your personal favorite?
Oh gosh, you know, I always liked that old Larry Nelson, NWO one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I always like that one. I'm trying to, of course, Atlanta. I like that one. It's hard to say. Hey, I'm just thankful that you always have these great guests on to give these great stories and great characters. I mean, that helps make the show and gives you inspiration. Without these guys, I mean, who knows what would happen. I just think for all these guys that have all these great and crazy characters and stories, Tom about made me bust my ass with that TR-NAC stuff the other night. That's when my wife was like, she must be listening to that Stupid Wrestling Podcast, and I just start dying laughing. So
that's going to be my bumper sticker. Are you listening to that Stupid Wrestling Podcast? Perfect.
I love it that I get the credit for the stupid part. Like there's like the Tom Burks of the world, and you, a lot of you guys fall into the historians and the you know, wrestling experts on the serious part. And Scott is I said this about Scott before. He's like a comedy writer. Like I know a lot of comedy writers, and I just throw out whatever the fuck comes to my mind. Scott, like I would think, I don't know this for a fact, Scott, you can confirm this, but watches what he writes and makes the most effective joke. I love the fact that I'm the idiot. I like being the show idiot, where I'll just say anything.
You do a good job of that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I think there's a section that digs it, and then there's a section that doesn't. But I think it works all the way around.
Well, thank you, Tom. I agree. I mean, I do write stuff, and I have no experience really ever doing that before. But I've told Brian if we ever come up with something spontaneously or off the cuff, that's so much more rewarding, so much more entertaining for me. But you know, I had no idea that this was going to go the way it did when I first started doing the podcast a few months ago.
You know, I want to give both of you guys credit because I could not do what either of you do. I mean, Scott, you do it in advance. Tommy, you do it on the fly. I mean, all I can do is sit in the corner and make smart-ass remarks. That's all I got, man.
Well, there's a see, now
you
can, I'm
you
sober.
Can, you can hear from tonight just how funny I am off the cuff.
Well, there's another guy, TGBL, that does help. I'm sure he helps Scott too, but he helps me with a little writing. If I get stuck on something, I'll run something by him and I'll say, well, maybe do it this way. So you're a little stupid too, host man.
I give you all the right. credit for all those bits. You're the stupid one. I want you to have all the stupid credit. I'll just sit here and let you take it all. I'm a very humble man.
Cool. That's cool.
Tom, I was going to say that one of the things that's great about TR-NAC is that, much like the original Karnak, who was at his best when his jokes would die,
yeah,
the bits with you and Brian are best when the joke just falls completely flat and there's just
agree.
Like dead air, which makes it that's the best, you know.
Well, watching you I agree. The that's die.
Mike LaBelle.
Like I have stuff written that I'm scared that it's a little too far, but I don't want to expose it to him beforehand because then it kills that reaction. If it sucks, I want him to bury it, and I want it just to be silenced because then it becomes funnier as the week goes on. You know, the more you think about how stupid it was, like last week's Tatanka, that was just ludicrous. But I chuckled in the shower thinking about it. Yeah, maybe I'm in my own world. Who knows?
I like Brian's commentary, and he's got a big personality, but as a straight man, he's very, very funny because you'll say something ridiculous, and they'll just say, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
My favorite...
And that pops me.
Yeah. it's so funny.
One of my favorite moments was when we had the rap battle, and... Tom, just, you know, we all know the story. Leroy McGurk lost one eye and then he lost the second eye in a car accident and he was blind. Or if he didn't lose the second eye in the car, he went blind in the second eye during the car accident. I forget exactly what happened, but Tom goes, as stuttering Tommy Rich, he goes, I saw you on the sideline. You looked like a jerk. You make everybody blind. Just ask Leroy McGurk. And it just made no sense. It just makes absolutely no sense at all.
It rhymed. What am I going to do?
The one thing from the rap battle part. I think that was the most popular, because I've seen it the most times reposted or sent to me, was Scott's line, wave your hands in the air if you lent money to Ric Flair.
Yeah, that was fun. Here's to the future.
Here's to the
future. Really.
Here's to the future.
Here's to the future.
I'm glad we got this all together. Thanks to you, Mr. Lasto.
Well, now that I got all these 80 observers, guys, where's Mr. Mike? Where's that guy at?
That guy disappeared.
Who was he? Who was the guy? For those of you who don't know, in the old Observer yearbooks, there was a guy named Mr. Mike who did artwork. He did like these, you know, several pages of comics spoofing professional wrestling. Who was that guy?
I know he was from Minnesota.
Yes. He actually went on a trip with Dave and I to Houston. The very first trip we, I think for the Western States Heritage Championship, that well-remembered belt. And the great thing was we picked him up at the airport because he came in a little bit later than Dave and I. And what I remember is it was like we got there on a Friday. We were leaving on a Sunday. And when we got back to his hotel room, and we were just all sitting there kind of shooting the breeze, and he's like unpacking his suitcase. And I thought it was really weird that for a 3-day trip, the guy had like 6 or 7 pairs of shoes. So I don't know if he had some kind of shoe fetish or what.
Maybe he has some kind of connection to Tony Atlas. There we go. Somebody got me. Parallel thinking.
Well, Tony Atlas draws anyway, so it might have been him in disguise.
Tony Atlas, it's not just a shoe fetish. He wants women to like step on his face. I don't know if that's I don't know if that's a regular part of the foot fetish community, that move, the walk on my face. But
that's hot. I mean, that's weird.
I'll be Googling that soon.
Tom, you want to field that one?
Anybody got a cell phone?
That's what Tony Atlas calls it when he will you Google my face? Will you
Brian, you should get Tony Atlas on the show. And just say, I don't care about your career. I just want to talk about your fetish.
You know, I actually want him on this show badly for one thing, and I brought it up a while back, but he's the only other person I ever saw with this story. Tony Atlas married, I don't want to call her a rat, but he married someone who was around the scene and dated wrestlers and fooled around with a lot of wrestlers. He married her. And in his book that Scott Teal put out, I think it's Too Much Too Soon. I think that's the name of the book. Also the name of the second New York Dolls album. But in that book, Atlas says that his wife, Lisa, I don't know if that's her real name or just like they changed her name for the book, but that she was in the hotel room with Snuka and his girlfriend when Nancy got beat up before her death. And he said the fight was over cocaine. I mean, and it's like the whole story is right there. And he says, she told me afterwards. And you know, I don't, as far as I know, it's no one's ever talked to Tony again about that story and said, hey, you know, he's on trial now, or, you know, now he's dead, but Snook is on trial now. What's your story? Where's your ex-wife? But it's in that book. And the book came out a few years before all the stories about Snooker started getting out in the public again. It was put out there before it was like a scandalous thing to touch on again. So I've always wanted to hear more about that from him.
What was her date of death?
One at a time. John McAdam first.
What was the day that she died, Nancy?
It was May 10th or 11th, 83, right?
I don't know if Tony was back with the WWF by then.
I don't know, but I'm not saying that he was with her at the time. I believe they got married after that. But that
she had been
around the scene. That's why I said I don't want to call her a ring rat or anything, but she was around that party scene of, you know, being a young woman hanging out with the wrestlers at the hotels. Tom, what were you going to say?
I was going to say one of the 605ers has a picture with him. I was wondering if anybody out there has a contact to him.
To Tony Atlas, Scott Teal.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, you just ask Scott. It's a weird thing to talk. I mean, it's weird that I would love to talk to Atlas about a lot of things, but the two things I'd really want to talk about on the air are what he witnessed with Brody and this story about his ex-wife being in the hotel room with Snuka and Nancy Argentino.
He seems like, you could get that through at some point in the interview, and he wouldn't.
Brian?
Yeah.
Brian, I got an interesting snooker story for you. So I go out to dinner about a month ago with my wife and some of her coworkers, and my wife is a occupational therapist. And so as she was talking to the group at the table, one of the guys pops up because my wife mentioned that I had written the book. And this guy pops up and he says, oh, you know who I just treated a couple weeks back? Mind you, this is right after Snooka had died. He goes, I treated Jimmy Snooka's wife. And I kind of looked and I said, you're kidding me. And so he tells me about how he started talking as he was treating the wife. He started talking to Jimmy Snooka. And he goes, when he gets up to leave at the end of the session, Jimmy Snooka walks over and he starts telling me what Jimmy Snooka said to him. And he basically was doing a Jimmy Snooka promo because it made no sense. And the guy goes, yeah, he's talking to me. He's going, hey, brother, you know, brother, you got to just keep living, brother. That's what you got. It's all about life, brother. And I go, that's like a promo from 83.
And you can hear more about that in Jeff's next book, Breaking Bread, Dinner with My Wife and Her Friends, which will be out on Crowbar Press at some point in the future. Yeah, I think I tried it way back on the show. Someone sent me a couple transcripts of Jimmy Snooka's 1983 interviews, and they're amazing. They are just simply amazing, just because everything is the loveness and the kindness of the people. And it's just, I'm making it more coherent than it was by saying it like that. It's astounding. And then, of course, years ago,
I think he was framed by Kevin Sullivan.
Don't let Bill Apter hear you say that. No, but years ago, one of the early episodes I talked about it, Scott sent me that article where Jimmy Snooka was interviewed before an indie show that he was doing in upstate New York. And it's just the exchange where, what was the highlight of your career? The highlight was the night in Madison Square Garden, brother, where I stood on top of the cage and I dove off the peak of the world. And the guy's like, and the interviewer, who has no idea what he's talking about, says, am I to take it that you came in from a very high distance? And Snooka goes, that's what I'm still trying to figure out, brother. It's almost amazing quotes in that story.
I think very high is the operative phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only had
well, gentlemen, I was the original tonight, so I'm going to move on. It was a pleasure to speak with some old friends and some new friends. And
same here.
Brian surprised me early, which was really cool. Brian, thank you for that. And let's just keep kicking ass, and hopefully we'll get together for a convention, if not at least a mini convention, so we can all just bullshit in person.
Yeah. Or, you know, half of us can go to Mons Venus, and the other half of us could bullshit in person.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, Tommy. I want to, you know what? Let me just, before you go, I'm going to hang up on you just to make it official.
Okay.
All cool. Right.
Yep.
Later, Tom.
Fuck you.
Later.
Later.
Later, man.
Bye, Tom.
He's gone.
I know that. Three. Is he still on the line?
I hung up from Tom.
Oh, there he goes.
Yeah, I think he's. Oh, yeah, because you can actually see, because you're on Skype too. You can see who's on here and who's been on here and what the story is. But I think it's about time to wrap up. This went a little longer than I thought. Very interesting show. I think you guys will like the beginning of the show, which I won't tell you about now. And like I said before, it was originally going to be St. Patrick's Day Star Wars. It turned into Snow Day Star Wars. And that's the show. Another holiday special will be coming up pretty soon, I think, maybe, with the Super Podcast. But of course, you guys know how it works. You can listen to the Super Podcast each and every week. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, everywhere you find or steal your favorite podcast, and of course, 605pod.com. Join our Facebook community, facebook.com/superpodcast. For all Amazon purchases, use tinyurl.com/superpod. Amazon, other shows have links. Fuck those guys. Support the Super Podcast. Support your Super Podcast. And that's it. I'll do the rest of the plugs on the normal show, which will probably be in several days. This show is going to go up so everyone cannot go, hey, where's the show? And then it'll take me a few more days to get the other show ready. But I think everyone will really love it. Next show, we'll have part 3 with the Grappler, as well as some other things I'm working on. But I guess I'll let everyone say goodbye one by one. Travis, you go first.
Hey, good talking to everybody. Y'all have a great night. And if you're ever getting new characters, bring him to the 605 and give me some more inspiration.
I love to hear that. Very, very good. Travis, thank you for being a part of this.
Thanks, Brad.
McAdam, Baldrin, Scott, someone else say something.
I can't believe you missed a chance to do a fuck those guys with the group, having the entire group do that.
Do we want to try that? I feel like it'll be a disaster. All right. On account
Blitz, definitely do it.
On the count of three, everyone can do fuck those guys. 1, 2, 3. Fuck those guys.
Perfect.
See? Yeah, it sucked. But anyway, you guys get the message.
You weren't alone, this man.
It's the best catchphrase that cannot appear on a t-shirt or a bumper sticker because it'll give off the wrong impression. But yes.
Unless you're in Boston.
Unless you're in Boston. Fuck those guys. But I'll now say the goodbyes. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Scott. And thank you, Jeff and John. And, of course, Travis for being a part of this. But until next time, tally-ho! I can't cut it now.
It's a thing that won't die.
Boogeyman, do you want to sign us off?
No, not particularly.
Okay. All right. Well, once again, tally-ho!